your mind.
You know, I speak for the fans in a lot of ways. I know how they feel. They're great. They're loyal. They want a bang for their buck.
We know how you feel because we feel the same way too. This is Sportsnet 650, home of the Canucks. My name is Dr. Tej Dhaliwal, and I'm joined by Sat Obroy, Nav Desange, and Ryan Cattermole. We are the LarshCast.
Hold up. Hold up. Hold up. Hope you're ready for the next episode. Hey.
Okay, welcome to the LarshCast here, February 20th, 2021. You are locked with Sat, Nav, Ryan, TJ, and Joey Pitt. On the heels of a Canucks 2-0 loss to the Jets yesterday. And we're going to dig into all things Canucks today. We have a great show for you. We're also going to debut a new segment today called Into the Podverse, where we are going to focus on and bring on a member of a local Vancouver Canucks podcast to kind of have a roundtable with the LarshCast boys here. And we got a couple other guests for you. 10 a.m., we're talking to Joey Kenward, as always. Joey's going to have a lot to say about the game last night. 11:30, we're going to talk to Murat Ates of The Athletic, covering the Winnipeg Jets, and get his perspective of how the game went last night and what the Canucks fans can look forward to from the Jets tomorrow on Sunday. So before we get started with digging into last night's game, I want to bring in Ryan. How you doing, Ryan?
Oh, you know, I'm doing good. I think I was riding an emotional high after the win against Calgary. And I think, like the rest of everybody this morning in Canucks land, I've been brought back down to earth a little bit and having a bit of a reality check. But other than that, you know, it's a beautiful Saturday morning and we're live on the radio. So, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, we can't complain too much. And I still think that the Canucks are going to get it figured out here. But, you know, again, they're running out of a runway to get this plane landed as we speak, sort of thing. But I don't know, I'm interested to see what the temperature of Canucks land is as we progress with the show today. And I would say let's have everybody that's listening be texting into the Sportsnet text message in line at sports pound 650 650. Let us know what you're thinking as well too. I know there's a little bit of discontent on the LarshCast, so maybe let's see how you feeling, Nav. How you doing today, buddy?
Is this Ryan or is this TJ? Are you hanging out with TJ, Ryan? What's going
I'm
on
trying
here?
To stay positive.
Like, they still have a chance? I'm sorry to say, why do I always have to be the voice of reason? And I know everyone says on this show that I'm the voice of negativity. I think I'm the voice of reason. Boys, it's over. I mean, I'm watching this game last night, I'm frustrated, I'm screaming at my TV. And I mean, is this just not another Canuck thing? We've seen so many things that are just Vancouver Canuck. You know, their former goalie comes in, shuts them out. Their former player comes in, gets a hat trick. And what is the most Canuck thing ever? A backup irrelevant goalie comes into town and shuts them out. They make them look like Patrick Waugh. I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, they had offensive pressure, but how many shots did they actually get on net that were dangerous? It's over. I don't know. I don't want to be negative, Joey. I'm not sure what you think. Are you coming my side? Are you going to be positive? What do you think, Joey?
Remember in the 90s when the Canucks just used to have their way with the Jets? Remember that? We never lost to Winnipeg back in the day. And since they relocated from Atlanta, this team just has their way with Vancouver. It's been a problem, right? I don't know if this is the end of the line because Vancouver's never been good against Winnipeg, right? But because the team overall played well. There was one mistake and it cost them, obviously. It's been the Canucks the entire year. But is this the end of the line? That's a tough thing to say. I think what we'll find out is after tomorrow night against Winnipeg, the second game of the set is when we'll find out if it's really over.
All right, so TJ, what do you think of this? What's your sky's blue take today?
Oh man, well, first of all, I'm looking for some extra Z's this morning. My kid was a monkey all night last night, so you'll have to bear with me if I lose my train of thought. But last night's game, I saw a couple things from this team. Essentially, I saw that they still have, well, they found the will to win, but they have to, you know, actually go out and win those games to qualify for the playoffs still. But if you ask me, are they out in this Canadian division? I mean, look what we've seen so far. There's only really one constant, and that's that, you know, I hate to admit it, the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to finish first overall. Mm-hmm. You know, every other team is kind of, Montreal had this amazing start, now they're falling back down to earth. Edmonton struggled a little bit here, you know, to find consistent hockey, and now they're, you know, skyrocketed into second place in the division. The Canucks, you know, obviously had that terrible start with a brutal, you know, schedule and new faces in the locker room, a lack of preseason, everything that added up hurt the Canucks in the beginning. But now they're starting to play hockey that I can feel confident every time I watch them play that, yeah, they might win this game. And so if they continue playing this way, who's to say they can't at least go, you know, a minimum of 600 hockey the rest of the way, and you know, maybe they play a little bit better than that, and they're going to be fighting with Calgary and, you know, potentially Edmonton and Winnipeg for that fourth and final spot in the playoff division. So I can't say it's over, and yeah, this may be an optimistic take, but at the end of the day, I mean, this is it's going to be a dogfight the rest of the way in the Canadian division. I just don't think any team besides Toronto can say they are guaranteed to make the playoffs at this point. So
I think that's a great point. And you know, the difference between the loss to the Jets yesterday and the most of the losses this season is that the Canucks were in it for the entire game. Mm-hmm. Up until even when it was 2-0 and they had that stupid 4-on-4 that should have been probably been a 5-on-3 for the Canucks. But up until that point, they were in it. And even the last faceoff, you know, the team was looking to score a goal. Even though I don't know what it is about the lotto line or when they're on a power play, I don't know why they don't take shots. Like, take a shot, get a dirty goal,
yeah. just Sedin,
you know,
syndrome.
Fire everything. Exactly. It's like the Sedin syndrome there, right? I don't know. I mean, it's a point of frustration. And I know we'll get into this later on today on individual performances. But JT Miller, something's seriously wrong with that guy. Right?
Yeah. I don't think Miller's been terrible offensively. Like, I think when he's in the offensive team zone, he's generally okay. Like, he can make plays. It's when he's in the Canucks end that he gives me all kinds of nightmares. Like, he just skated out in front of Demko with two dudes in front of the net. Mm. And he gave it away. Demko had to make a big save. I mean, our goaltender shouldn't have to bail us out as much as they do this season. Holtby and Demko have been through the ringer, and we're like 20 games in.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, and I love what you said there, Joey, and I'm going to kind of tee off on that a little bit, where he's been good in his offensive zone. But you know, the problem is, and I've talked about this with some of my friend group and just general Canucks fans out there in conversation, you know, JT Miller's almost essentially a point-a-game player, but I don't think any one of us could say that he's played quote-unquote well. And yeah, he's getting his points, but Joey, I'm not even sure that I like where his offensive side of the game is at, because, you know, the difference between this year and last year is that he was truculent, and we know all that. But the other thing was, he was making the smart play. He was chipping it around guys. You know, he was skating onto the puck. He was using his feet when he needed to. If I see one more situation where JT Miller, instead of making the smart chip around play, tries to force a puck through an opponent's feet or through their stick, I don't know what's happening there. It's just a decision-making process to me. Like, I don't think anybody would argue that he's been offensively decent, but even in the offensive zone, I think he's struggling with his decision-making. I don't know. Now, what do you think about that? Do you think, like, it's purely that, or is there more to it?
There's something wrong. I mean, you know, I read an article last year. I remember, I think it was from New York, and this guy's been traded 3 times, and, you know, the article basically consisted of him saying that this is the kind of guy that he's great for a month, and he'll vanish for the next couple of months. And I was like, what are they talking about? Because he was so incredible last year. Like, you know, we said so many times, he didn't drive the bus, but he pushed the bus up the hill. So I couldn't see that kind of player. But I'm seeing that this year. Like, he's there. He's getting the points, but, you know, he's on the top line. He's on the top power play. Guys, he's going to get his points. He's playing with two great players. And let's be honest, Brock Besser is pushing that bus up the hill this year, right?
Yeah.
So JT Miller so far this year, like last night to me described JT Miller's season. 2 plays in the defensive zone, one where he shot it basically on Demko, and the goal that the, you know, Scheifele scored. Whose fault was that? People are going to blame Edler, but Edler was flat-footed at the blue line.
Yeah,
Miller gave him the puck. Why is Miller giving him that 4-foot pass? There's no need to do that. Pass it back into the board, like behind the net. And on offensive side, the last 2 minutes left in the game, I think, Sat, you saw that too. He had Brock Besser for a short breakaway. Instead of chipping him the puck, he went into the corner and spun around trying to give it to the D. Like, something's wrong. I don't see the JT Miller of last year. I'm not sure if this year is the odd JT Miller or this is the real JT Miller. But man, I mean, he's getting points, but he does not look like the player that, you know, drove this team. And it's frustrating because, you know, I think this team goes where JT Miller goes. And right now he is not going.
And that's the saving grace for him right now is that he's getting the points, right?
Yeah.
So I think he's got, 14 points this year, 4 goals. I mean, he's not shooting the puck, as Joey likes to mention. You know, Joey Kenward will mention probably again today that, you know, Miller's just not getting shots through. And he's getting his points, whether that be on the power play or you know, late in games or whatever the case is. But it's frustrating at this point. And, you know, you look on the other side, the other wing, and you got Brock Besser, who's doing everything he can.
Yeah.
He's scoring goals. And, you know, that same play you're talking about there, Nav, you know, you got your leading goal scorer streaking down the middle of the ice in a one-goal game. Get him the puck. At least make the attempt. If the defender makes a good play, it chips off his skate and it goes to the corner or goes and Besser misses the pass, whatever, you'll take that. But you can't accept not attempting the pass, right? You need to give yourself a shot, right? You know, I think it's Jordan that says you miss, you know, 100% of the shots you don't take, or Gretzky or one of the GOATs.
Gretzky.
Yeah.
Or Michael Scott.
Yeah.
But no, guys, the thing is, like, and that's frustrating too. And is this just, I'm not sure if you guys noticed this over years and years of being Canuck fans. Have they not always had this? They had this with the West Coast Express. They had this with the Sedins. I mean, they could be down 3 goals with a minute left, and they'll still keep cycling the puck or keep circling the puck. They won't shoot. I don't know what it is. Is it something in the Vancouver era? I'm not sure what you guys feel about that, Ryan. Is it something happening?
You know what it is for me is, and I think we've shifted away from this, but it's funny to see this team come back to that. There was a time where we had a ton of Swedish talent on this team, and we wanted to play like the Detroit Red Wings. We wanted to play that possession-style game. We wanted to have the puck all of the time. And when we had the Sedins, we could get away with doing that when they were in their prime because they just didn't turn the puck over in the offensive zone. They were so good at protecting, finding the open space. And I think that's what led to those teams looking for that perfect opportunity. And I mean, as much as we hated the Sedins doing it back in the day, it was a thing of beauty to watch when they got it right. And they got it right often enough that they could get away with playing like that. To me, this Vancouver team, like, we got guys like Brock Besser, not the best playmaker on the planet, although he's showing different this year. I mean, that guy needs to be ripping the puck every chance he can get. Same thing with Elias Pettersson, and I know that guy's hit, you know, a ton of posts this year already. I think he's at 9 or 10 for the year already. So I think, you know, he's not confident in his shot. I don't think Miller, even though he's been scoring, is either. So I think it's not so much a wanting to control the flow of play and keep possession. I think it's a nobody's trusting their own shot situation right now. And these guys just got to realize, like, Petey's got to realize you're close to scoring when you're hitting that many posts. But he's just got to stick with it. Not shooting is a step in the wrong direction as far as I'm concerned. But I don't know. I feel like we haven't heard from TJ in a while here. He's been oddly silent this morning. So I don't know. What are your thoughts here, TJ? Like, what does this top line need to do?
I know you're tired. I'm catching up on some sleep. No, I'm just, a little out of it.
Snoozing in the studio.
Yeah, pretty much the studio at home here. No, I think you guys are, you know, mentioning good points. About JT Miller, I just want to say, you know, we got to stop looking at him as the reason this team isn't getting these results when they deserve to win. So you can point your finger at him and say he made a play here or there that he shouldn't have done. But I've been seeing a new JT Miller, you know, as this team kind of is finding its identity. He's playing more like the JT Miller of last year, although we're really hard on him. We're still looking for him to be that. Some play driver or bus driver, whatever you want to call it. But at the end of the day, you need the other players on this team, like Quinn Hughes and Petey. Like, where they go, this team goes. Where Thatcher Demko goes, you know, this team goes. So it can't just fall on JT Miller's shoulders, although he does need to be better. But I think he has been better personally. You know, I read your ridiculous tweet, Nav, saying you should maybe scratch him for a game. I think you're insane for even suggesting that. But you know, Nav, that's not the first time you've made an insane tweet, so we'll leave that alone there. But hold on, just to talk about Petey for a second. What do you guys think about Christopher Stieg in the intermission? He nailed it, I think. You know, right. I think I mentioned it a few times about that one-timer. It may be hard to listen to Christopher Stieg, you know, talk about the Canucks because he's a former Chicago Blackhawk, as we know, and the infamous series that we've had in the past against those teams. But I think he nailed it absolutely 100%. Petey needs that shot to be a weapon that, you know, penalty killers fear so that he can open up other options on that power play. What do you guys think?
You know what? Funny enough, I did listen to him afterwards and agreed with him. I think he's actually really good. He's doing a good job there. But I had my TV on mute and I was looking at this guy and I couldn't remember who he was and I was just getting angry. I'm like, why is this guy pissing me off? I don't even know who he is. And then I unmuted and realized who it was. I'm like, oh, Blackhawk connection. Any Blackhawk pisses me off. But no, okay, that tweet that I sent out, TJ. This is TJ telling me about tweets. But anyway, guys, I said that in the tweet, you know, obviously benching him would be, you know, benching him completely would be obviously maybe a little bit too much. But I don't disagree with the fact that perhaps pushing him down the lineup or taking him off that first power play, putting Hoglander there, would that hurt this team? I don't think it would. I mean, yeah, I'm not sure what you're watching, TJ, but JT Miller is not looking better. He's still making those boneheaded plays that are not JT Miller style. Like, the game isn't like, you know, he missed the first few games and you can say, okay, he didn't have a training camp. That excuse is out the window for this whole team. Whatever, 20 games into the season, we got like 7 or 8 games on hand on some of these teams. That excuse is over. You can't use that anymore. Maybe this is the JT Miller they're going to get for the rest of the season. Maybe, okay, hopefully we'll hear that he's hurt. And then
when you say he's not playing better, I mean, what are you watching that you're not seeing him do anything different here in the last few games that
he's
we've
passing.
Seen?
He's passing. His passing is off, TJ. His energy is off. Kind of like you this morning, his energy is off. You know, last year, he'd be on the ice, and even on the bench, you'd watch him, and, you know, PD would make a mistake, or Brock would make a mistake, and, you know, obviously young kids, and he'd be in their ear barking at him. And this year, maybe it's because he's the one that's making the mistakes. He's not saying as much. But even if you watch him on the bench, his body language is different. He's sitting there screaming at himself. He's swearing at himself, which we all even heard on TV multiple times. But he's not really – he's not being that leader. You know, perhaps it is because of the fact that he's been one of the problems on that top line or the top six is maybe he doesn't have the right to say anything. But he doesn't look like JT Miller. I don't care how many goals he scores. I want the JT Miller from last year – who I watched, I'd be like, if I'm Besser and Petey, I don't want to make a mistake because, you know, JT Miller is going to bite my head off. That's a JT Miller I want back.
Yeah. I know Joey's got something to say here, right? Joey, you want to pipe in?
Yeah, well, I actually just wanted to add to what Ryan was saying earlier on about how it's the cycle thing, right? So they're down by a goal and they just continue to cycle it. So if I think back to when I was a kid, my favorite Canuck team personally was the 09 Canucks, the Cardiac Kids, where they'd go down by like 2 goals at the end of the second and they'd somehow come back to win. Now, if you remember back to that team, it wasn't the Sedins and Matt Sundin who was always the guys to get the team back into the game. It was that third line of Ryan Kesler, Alex Burrows, and Ryan Johnson that always got things going. I think the absence of Tyler Mott is starting to show for this team. Because Motter has been the guy to just, he's the little energizer bunny. He was the one that got things going for the team. And without him there, they're starting to slow down. They're having to rely on Miller to generate that sort of thing when he's not in the right mental space to do it. And throughout the season, we've seen that it's been Besser to drive that line. And I think obviously there's something wrong with JT Miller. Jimothy Timothy has not been the player that we know he can be. But we also have been told this is who he could be by all of the pundits from the other teams he's played for. So it's a weird scenario.
Absolutely. Here's a text in from Torgy on the text line here. I've been a fan of JT Miller since his Ranger days. NBC always had Ranger games. I was jacked when we acquired him. I don't know what's going on with him. It's not just him, though. He stuck out more because of the great season he had last year, but I expect him to turn it around. Where would we be without Best, though, boys? And that's Torgy.
That's such a great transition. And once again, you're listening to the LarshCast on Sportsnet 650. Ryan here with Sat, TJ, Nav, and Joey. We got producer Joel Gaudette working the switchboard for us as well. And I think, you know, let's make the switch here, guys. Let's talk about the positive feel-good side of this conversation, because as disappointed as we've been with Miller, I don't think we can say the same for Brock Besser. He's a point a game. He's got 12 goals, 9 assists. He's only a minus one. And guys, as a side note, does it not surprise you that Bo Horvat is a minus 8 right now, considering how well
no,
he played. And
he's
how
always a minus player.
He is always a minus player, but it's just surprising to see him. At some point, we got to talk about Quinn Hughes on the minus side as well, too. But for the Brock Besser positive conversation, you know, this is a guy who I think we can all agree, after he went back first into the door at the bench a couple of years ago, he's struggled with injuries. He hasn't looked like himself. This is the first season where he looks like that confident guy that can just snap the puck in tight to his feet. That old like Joe Sakic style shot where he's got the puck in tight and he can just rip it at a moment's notice. And you know what? We need that. We need guys that have the confidence to shoot, confidence to score right now. I am so pleased with the evolution of Brock Besser's game. You know, guys, we're only a few months removed from when we were talking about him being traded to Minnesota, the Canucks giving up on this player. Can you even imagine that talk now? It's absolutely insane for me to think about. But
who are they going to trade him for? Dumba? Take the A off the end of that name, and you know you get my exact representation of what I thought about that. And I know TJ hates the Nav speaks. But guys, how many times did I go off last year when people had these things on Twitter? Yeah. People had these guys in media saying, "Oh, Besser, you know, perhaps we trade him." I thought it was the dumbest thing to do. I go, "This guy is a potential 30 goal scorer, which are hard to find." Mm-hmm. Well, look at him now. He's on record pace.
I'll say for all your Nav speaks, that was your best one. You nailed it, the Besser take, and was right at the height of that. You know, that rumor mill, you know, whatever it was at the time, it was crazy. It was going wild that, Besser was potentially on the market or was going to be, you know, traded for Matt Dumba. And then you come out and say, this is, you know, absolutely asinine and ridiculous. And I'll give you credit for that one. But, you know, the rest of your Nav speaks, I mean, I'm tired now, boys. I mean, when Nav goes off on those little rants, I
thought you were going to talk very much today, TJ. Yeah. Can you go back to that? It was going really well.
You think I'm talking much right
okay,
now?
Okay, okay. So getting back to Besser here now, right? So, Ryan, you made a great point that, you know, he's got the snap back. And, you know, his mojo's full there now, full value right now. Mm. Just take a look at the goal that he scored against, I was going to say Kiprasov, Markstrom.
Wow.
Right? That's dating us. Man.
Don't pop like Markie's tires like that.
Yeah, so that goal he scored on was a 3 or 4 on 1 when he asked for the pass and he put it in the back of the net, right? Yeah. So that just exudes confidence. And that's the Brock Besser the Canucks need as, you know, he's not going to be Petey, he's not going to be Quinn Hughes. If he's that, like, second tier and he's playing this way for... you know, extended periods of time, that's what they need from their secondary players, right? They need
I think
a potential
that shot
30 goals.
That shot too, you know, exercise some demons. Chasing Markey out of the game.
Yeah.
You know, that series against the Flames, whether or not this team ends up in the playoffs, we all know they've turned their season around and they're playing a brand of hockey that we can all get behind. You know, we want the results, we want the wins, but watching this team play hockey the way they are now, we at least can get excited about games again, and that's a result of that exercising demons against the Flames here. Chris Tanev and Markey, you know, the first few games they had against us, it was, you know, it was a rough going for us and the Canucks fans, and it was just Markstrom gets a shutout his first game, and so being able to chase him out of the game, and then Brock Besser with that shot, you know, that wasn't just a snipe, that I feel like he was burying that puck deep into the back of that net just because it was Markstrom in front of the goal there. So.
It's almost like the dagger in the back of Marc-Andre Fleury last year, right? That's what it looked like.
I mean, not exactly, but sure.
If you want to bring that up, I'm not going to stop you.
Yeah.
Did you guys not enjoy seeing that, though? I mean, as much as we love Markstrom, we love Tanev, I found it, I don't want to say petty, but it was kind of getting me pissed off a little bit. It's like, they're playing them every single game against us. Is that Markstrom going in there? I want to play. Like, get over it. You're gone. Like, which other goalie in any other scenario would play 4 games in a row? And, you know, it's just good on the Flames, good on Markstrom that he looked, you know, pretty average to terrible in that 4th game. And, you know, the Canucks just piled up the goals. Good on the Canucks and good on the Flames for looking that weak for doing that.
And here's a great text, actually, from Brandon in Kamloops. One of the best things about Brock's game right now is that he's playing this way in a non-contract year. So that's actually really true.
Good point.
Yeah, he's setting himself up for a big payday in a year and a half. But you know what? We have a great segment coming up next. We're going to have Brad Thomas from Area 51 Sports on with us.
Former member of the LarshCast, Brad Thomas.
Former member of the LarshCast, Brad Thomas. And we're going to do a bit of a roundtable. We're going to add a 6th member to this radio show. So hopefully we don't get too out of control here.
Well, make 5 and stick a half around with me today, I guess.
But. Yeah, stick around. You're listening to the LarshCast on the home of the Vancouver Canucks on Sportsnet 650. That digs on me. I ain't saying she a gold digger, but she ain't messing with no broke. Now I ain't saying she a gold digger, but she ain't messing with no broke.
down, girl, go ahead, get down. Get down, girl, go ahead, get down. Get down, girl, go ahead, get down. Get down, girl, go ahead. Cutie the bomb.
This is Sportsnet Today with the Larsh Cast. Now hear are your boys on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
All right, welcome back to the Larsh Cast here this Saturday morning. We got an exciting new segment coming up here. It's called Into the Podverse, and we're going to be bringing on in short order here one member of the Canucks podcast universe each Saturday morning, just to have them join the roundtable live on air on radio. And you know, we thought it was a way for us, who, you know, we came out of that same podcast universe, just a way to give back maybe, and you know, and shed some light on some other great podcasters here in Canucks Nation doing some great things. So coming up shortly here, it's Brad Thomas, who is a former member of the Larsh Cast and now with Point Shot Hockey. But just, you know, that song that we came out of break here to, Gold Digger, I heard something really, really interesting about how that song came about. And I don't know if you guys have heard this before, but apparently Jamie Foxx was throwing a party, and Kanye West was there, and you know, Jamie Foxx has a studio in his mansion, and so somebody recommended that they go down to the studio and just have some fun. And so Jamie Foxx didn't really know who Kanye West was, and they go down to the studio, they start having some fun, making, you know, Kanye asked Jamie Foxx to sing a hook, and so Jamie does this little hook that you just heard there on Gold Digger. But lo and behold, you know, at the time, he didn't really know what was going on. He just did a hook. They were having fun. But lo and behold, a few days later, Jamie Foxx is driving down the road, and he hears his voice on the radio, you know, as a feature hook for this number one hit song, you know, across the nation. And that was the genius of Kanye West, just taking a little sample where they're just messing around in studio and turning that into a number one hit song nationwide. So I thought that was pretty cool.
So wait, you're telling me Jamie Foxx didn't know that was going to happen?
He had no idea that his little hook, you know, that
sounds
he
like
did
a lawsuit,
for,
man.
Well, no. Why would it be a lawsuit? You're hearing yourself on air, on radio, across the nation. You're probably proud. You're not going to. Why would you think of suing somebody for
people
that?
People sue
Come
for
on,
everything.
Okay, no, please. Can I ask you something, TJ? That's a huge deal. I'm not going to take that either way. But you know, the man won an Oscar, right?
He did. Actually, it's funny.
I don't think
he
really cares about the radio.
It's funny. You're not going to sue somebody, but like Sat said. But at the same time, it was it just speaks to the genius of Kanye West. I know he has his issues, and a lot of people, you know, like to point that out all the time. He seems to be a little, you know,
MAGA
sometimes. But you know, some of the most impressive, let's say, scientists or individuals or researchers, you know, people in the world, they kind of flirt on the edge of that you know, spectrum, so to speak. And so maybe Kanye is just a genius to that point where, musically speaking, you know, he can do something like that, taking anybody's little, you know, hook in the studio, just singing and messing around, and turn it into a you know, a huge blockbuster hit, or not a blockbuster, but you know what I mean, Grammy award winning, you know, song. And so
TJ, I'm glad to say you're fine, you're completely safe, you're normal.
Okay, anyways,
yeah. Well, you know what's funny is true, before we move on, Nav, you said that he also won an Oscar during that time. Jamie Foxx also lived as Ray Charles for like way longer than he should have when he was doing that movie, if you guys recall, and it was like a bizarre thing too. But just a side note, but that's a cool story, man. And as a musician myself, it's interesting to see how sort of that stuff comes about.
Yeah. How do we segue onto the Canucks here now? Like,
well, let's segue back. Well, here's the segue, because Kanye is in the news again for a recent divorce with Kim Kardashian, and you know, we're gonna bring on Brad Thomas here, who back in the until 2019, there was a little bit of a divorce from the Larsh Cast. So, Brad Thomas, welcome to the show. I'll bring you on just like that. Brad, are you there?
Wow.
What an intro. No, the reason I say that, Brad, is because they're talking about this being an amicable divorce. I think ours was pretty amicable too, because you're on to a lot of interesting new things right now. Tell us about what you're doing right now with Point Shot Hockey.
Yeah, I mean, our team at Point Shot, we're just having a lot of fun basically right now. It's been pretty cool. Our founder, Sean Warren, he's starting a network, the Area 51 Sports Network. So we've been able to add some other shows and try to help some other people kind of get into this and have some fun, right? Because obviously you guys can see how much what happens when you have fun, right? You guys are on the radio right now. So, so we added two other guys, Matthew Will and Riley Feenan, on with the Hawksnet show, which I'm sure Nav's going to love. And, with the point
Big Hawks fan.
Yeah, point shot. We're having some good guests coming up, and yeah, just having a lot of fun. Basically, that's the whole point of it.
Oh, that's exciting to hear. I gotta ask, because last time we were all together in our studio, the LarshCast studio, Brad. I remember we were having some fun reminiscing about the journey that we've been through, you know, as the LarshCast, and you were the pride of Ladner. How's that going for you?
Yeah, it's been cool. I'm getting a little bit of attention out here. Small town, right? So everyone's like, oh, how's the podcast going and all that. So yeah, it's been fun to be a little cool here in Ladner. Obviously, with COVID, can't really go out much, so I don't really see people. But yeah, every now and then I get a little message about it.
Brad, let me ask you this, Brad. I know this must be a really tough year for you. I know, you know, you love the name Tyler. You started that on the LarshCast, and you continued it. I watch you on Twitter there. Has it been difficult? No more Tyler Toffoli. Tyler Myers barely scores, even though he scored the other day. And now Tyler Mott, your boy, Tyler Mott, who you brought from, like, no one knew who he was, and you kind of brought him to the limelight. How difficult is it right now, your life and, you know, everything you do without Tyler Mott playing right now? I know you're struggling right now, buddy. Tell me.
Absolutely. Like, I miss watching Tyler Mott play every game, and it's not as fun without him. Especially Tyler Toffoli, because that was the guy who put the goals in, you know. And that's probably the biggest L that we've taken here as the Canucks fans this year, is not having Tyler Toffoli and watch him over in Montreal just absolutely torch us. So, yeah, that's been hard. But the good thing is yesterday we learned that we can bet on Canucks penalty minutes for Canucks to take 4+ penalties. So now I actually like Tyler Myers again. So that's pretty sick.
So are you gonna adjust your tequila Tyler to, you know, tequila Tyler taking penalty minutes?
That's a lot of drinks.
Yeah, oh man.
Yeah, I'm not trying to die here, but like.
You know what's funny about Tyler Toffoli? He's doing nothing else against anybody else in this this division. It's only against the Canucks. I mean, I think he's had was it 8 goals against us and maybe 1 against the other teams in the division? So that may,
yeah, but he's going to play us like 5 more times.
I think he has so many breakaways when he's playing us. Every time it felt like he's on a breakaway. Like, how does that happen?
It's the stars aligned, you know, that the Canucks' defensive woes were at their peak or their dip. And, you know, Tyler Toffoli had a little chip on his shoulder. So I think
I think that's exactly it. Like, the beginning of the year, our brutal schedule, it also included you know, those series against the 4 games there, and then the early games against Markstrom. You know, I think like you said, the stars aligned. But I have a feeling if we play Montreal again down the road, it's not going to be that same Tyler Toffoli show. I think we're going to be giving him back to him a little bit. I think the way we finished with Markstrom and the Flames will be reminiscent of how we finished with the Habs. I just think this team has turned a corner, and maybe Brad, I can ask you how you feel about that, and everybody else, we can continue talking about that. But I just, don't you guys think this team, like, every time you watch this team play now, you're more confident in their abilities to win. You can see them playing a much better brand of hockey, and whether you want to admit that playoffs are still a possibility, or maybe you feel that it's completely out of the, you know, realm of possibility, but the bottom line is it's not impossible yet. The math suggests that they can go on a run and make the playoffs, and so that's just the reality, Nav, whether you want to call it blue skies or gray, but that's just the reality we're living in. If this team shows up the way they play against the Jets last game and then against the Flames, every game going forward, if they show up like that, they have a chance to win.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, because over at Point Shot, I'm the only one with the rose-colored glasses here that's trying to support the home team blindly. But yeah, I think seeing yesterday, especially at the end of the game, just to see them all jump in and stick up for Hoglander there, that was the first time they looked like a team in a while this year. Even the Flames game, too, was another good sign, where they were just all going at the same time. So if we get a few, just kind of win 2 out of 3 here down the stretch, I think that's the key to make the playoffs for us.
For sure. I got a kind of fun question. And, you know, Brad, you just talked about how they jumped forward there and the, you know, aid of a Hoglander. And it was really funny for me to see all these blue and green sweaters kind of jump around. And everyone's calling it the Sprite Can jerseys, right? And I know Brad, you're a huge sucker for jerseys. So let's go around the horn. We haven't talked about this yet. What was your guys' first impressions of the Sprite Can jerseys? I mean, I loved them personally. What do you think there, Ryan?
That,
What's that? Oh, sorry. I didn't hear the Ryan at the last second there. You know, here's the thing for me, guys. I think I like what they tried to do. They tried to give that like salmon colored wash, but do it in the new blue and green colors. But to me, this jersey missed the mark. And I feel like for the most part, most of these reverse retro jerseys have missed the mark a little bit. I don't know where the decision-making process, maybe they left too much of it with the teams or whatever. But to me, this looks like, and I hate to say it because I want to love these jerseys because I like the color scheme. I just think it's the execution, the Sprite can mentality. To me, they look like when you go to Walmart and you buy one of those almost Canucks jerseys. I hate to say it, man. That was my honest gut reaction when I first saw them. And seeing them on the ice improved a little bit. I mean, they do look, it's kind of like the black and yellow and red 94 jerseys. Like, some people don't like them. You see them on the ice, they look a lot better. I love those jerseys, but I just couldn't get there with these reverse retros. I don't think it's a strong look. But Joey, I mean, you seem to disagree. So where are your thoughts landing there?
Okay, so when I started following this team back in the bright days of 2004, they still wore the original version of this on a regular basis. So I have an attachment to the original salmon jerseys. When they announced these, I was pumped, right? Everybody else immediately went to the Sprite can thing. I liked them. But again, it was always like, well, how are they going to look on the ice? I saw them on the ice. I loved them. I thought they popped beautifully.
Wow.
I love the idea of Vancouver having more green in their jerseys.
Literally. Yeah, Joey. I mean, I get what you're trying to get at, Joey, and I appreciate that. But I'm as a fan for a long time.
Here we go.
I'm just sick of how many jerseys have the Canucks had, and maybe it's because last year they kind of did the 50th anniversary thing, and they had obviously they brought the retro back there, and they wore the. Did they wear the Flying V in like one of the
warm-ups?
Warm-ups, right? I just have jersey fatigue. I got no problem with the jersey. It's fine. It's not great. It's not ugly. We've had ugly jerseys. Trust me. The Flying V was ugly, right? We think back to it. Oh, wow, it was beautiful. It was an ugly jersey. It looks like vomit. It's terrible. But it's not an ugly jersey. But I'm just tired of jerseys. How many times are you going to switch your jersey? They only need one jersey. Bring back the black skate. That's all I want. Don't do anything else.
The thing about this one, Nav, it wasn't a team decision. It was a league-wide decision.
Yeah.
So, if you're having jersey fatigue, it's one thing, but they are taking part in a league-wide venture here. So what I'll say, I mean, Brad will hear your thoughts on the jersey too after this, but I think I thought it was a pretty nice, like, on-ice look. Initially, when they came out, just the picture itself maybe was unsettling. It didn't seem like it was a nice look. Then I saw the actual jersey live at the Canucks team store. So it grew on me. And the thing about this jersey is every time you see it in a different element, it grows on you. And so I don't know if I can sit here and say, it's still a Sprite can or it looks a little or awful like Ryan suggests. Because every time I've seen it and now on ice watching the Canucks play in it, it has grown on me. So I think it's going to continue to grow on this market. I like the picture of, I call it a pod of orcas. What happens when you jump Niels Höglander is a pod of orcas attack you. There's an amazing picture that we posted on our Instagram feed. It just looks hilarious. But I think the color that's there looks so vivid. And so I'm a fan of the jersey myself. Brad, what do you think?
I like the dark blue. I think the dark blue is actually quite nice for our jerseys compared to that light blue that we have. But, I mean, obviously, I'd like it more if we won the game, you know? Like, if they won the game, like, 6-0 or something yesterday, I think we'd all be saying, yeah, these are the best jerseys we've ever had.
The funny thing is, I talk about jersey fatigue, and I'm looking through my Twitter feed, and I think I sent out a picture, if you guys remember, a few months ago, of how many jerseys I have. And I feel like I'm also afraid, as my wife's probably just staring me down. It's like, you're not getting this one, Nav. Don't even think about it. When she looks at this jersey, she's like, is this a new jersey? And she's staring at me. Don't even think about it. She's like, I know you don't have a Höglander one, but you ain't getting it. Don't do it. So that's the fear I have of the wife is probably also helping me not like the jersey.
Oh, I want a Sprite can, Louis, so bad.
Oh, God. That'll be a big seller. Get it now before it's sold out.
This is Kitsilano Al chiming in, says, I totally agree. I thought it looked like a Walmart special.
Yes.
Canadian Tire. I think they missed the mark also.
Oh, Canadian Tire.
I just think it's not reverse retro enough. That's Kitsilano Al. Craig the Stair Guy is saying, I was on the fence about the retro jerseys, but actually I like them. When I see them on the ice, I would buy one. Craig the Stair Guy says. And so, I mean, it's a... Don't you think the market has... from the initial reaction, it's more accepted now. You know, people more jumping on board and enjoy the look of the jersey. But at the end of the day, like Nav said, it's true. It wasn't our... wasn't the Canucks, you know, coming out with the suggestion, but there is a bit of jersey fatigue in this market. And I think it just goes to show that there's not a lot of things that we can celebrate. And a new jersey is one of those things that we can celebrate every year without the pain of a loss. And so maybe that's just something that...
You know what it is, TJ? I think it's not literally jersey fatigue. It's like the fans in this market love it. We love to talk about jerseys. We love to talk about the logo. It's a discussion point. And we're starved for content. We want to live, breathe, eat the Canucks and the NHL 24/7. And anything that can be an issue and can be discussed, we want to talk about it, right? So the fact that the Canucks have had a million different logos and jersey combinations.
There it is.
You know what? People wear it. We wear it as like a badge of honor and pride. It's people may hate on it, but they actually like it at the same time.
I mean, I think so too. I think it's the fact that, you know, like the jerseys are tradition. Like, say what you want about the winged wheel from the Detroit Red Wings. That thing is iconic. But every time they release a new jersey, is anybody excited? Like, they're all boring. They're all just slight variations on the same thing.
Except their winter Canucks. Classics.
Yeah, fair. You don't mess with the classics. Don't get me wrong, but I'm saying like when they release a new jersey, you're not hyped about it. Although their old English D that they wore in the outdoor game a few years ago, was fire. But generally speaking, I mean, here's the thing with the jersey. I get that we have the color fatigue, but for me, the only thing that we should talk about as a negativity from having all of those jerseys is the effect it has in the arena. You know, you look at the sea of red or the whiteout, and you know, that's not necessarily the Jets jerseys, but they have a continuity to the color scheme in the arena. Whereas if you go to Rogers Arena, when and if fans are allowed to go back at some point here, it looks like Bob Ross spilled his paint tray up there. You know, it's just a mishmash of colors all over the place. You know, so I mean, we don't look like we have continuity as a fan base in the stands. Yeah. But can I just say, guys, and I harp on this every time we talk about jerseys, everybody just Google them. If you're listening, go look. Can we just pre-opt the 94 skate style jersey, but with the color scheme that we have now? If you Google it, tell me that's not fire, guys. I don't know, Brad. No, what do you think like about it. That as our okay, Joey, let's see, Brad. I hope Brad can agree here.
Yeah, the black skate logo, sorry, with the blue and green.
With the blue, white, and green current colors of this jersey, there's tons of mock-ups online. That thing is fire.
Yeah, I've seen some of those. You know what? That's actually like a cool concept for the future for sure. I'm sure, honestly, like what you said, we'll end up seeing it at some point. Like they do like to change jerseys here a lot. And yeah, but I think like a black hole kind of thing, like the Vegas would be cool. Where we get the black skate jerseys and as our permanent jerseys and everyone in the arena's got the black. That would be a cool effect, I think.
Are we going to bring a shiny helmet to go with it, though?
Those are so bad.
Those shiny gold helmets are ridiculous. How is that? How can you legally play a game with that shiny gold helmet in your opponent's grill? Like, I don't understand.
Hang on, TJ, I got a comment. How are you legally allowed to play hockey with your shiny dome?
Ooh.
Ooh.
I thought you were reading a text or something. I'm like, what?
Wait, that's just coming hard.
It's a part of the technique. Nav, get out of here.
I'm so proud of you. It only took about a year and a half, 2 years to get you on board ripping TJ. If you can see me, I got a single tear going down my cheek right now. I'm so proud of you.
Yeah, that was violent.
Okay, ball jokes are cheap. And just like Brad, he knows. That's all they have, eh, Brad?
What's that?
It's just ball jokes, hey?
Nav's got a whole list of jokes for you, if I remember. Like, I'm pretty sure there's probably like 100 new ones by now.
He's got like an Excel file.
Every time we'd jump in the studio, we'd start talking, you know, we'd have a plan. Like, you know, this is the way we're going to do this podcast. And then like 5 minutes into it, it's me and Nav going back and forth. You know, randomly, whether it's Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees and then there's Brad being in the corner. Like, oh, Russell Wilson's the greatest quarterback of all time. Like, oh, Brad, wait your turn.
Brad.
So TJ, we got Brad on here for a few minutes. We got to ask him this. I know I don't want to jump ship too much on the Canucks quickly, but we have to. He's a Seahawks boy, and he was there for most of our original arguments, you know, before Ryan joined us to try to be the middle guy of the Russell Wilson takes. But, man, listen, Brad, let me ask you this. Like, you know, me and TJ go at it quite hard. You know, we didn't, neither one, one of our teams, you know, won this
year.
But, you know, let me finish here, Ryan. Neither one of my or TJ's teams won this year. But we lost to the GOAT, whereas your team lost to a one-handed quarterback that doesn't even play for the team anymore that he was playing for. So how do you feel about your Seahawks, and what do you think about the end result of the Super Bowl?
Leading the witness, Your Honor.
Yeah, the correction is we lost to ourselves. Just absolute falling apart coaching, and I have no idea what's going on with this team. And it's absolutely scary this offseason to hear that Russell Wilson is in a trade rumor. Like, that's just a nightmare scenario for this team.
Make a prediction, Brad. Is Russell Wilson gonna remain a Seahawk, or is he gone?
No, he'll remain a Seahawk, but they'll finally get him an offensive line. He'll get an offensive line this time for the first time.
We know that's never gonna happen.
Yeah. They have to.
They've been looking for that offensive line for eternity.
They want to run the ball this year. I think that's the plan. So they have to get an offensive line regardless.
Yeah. Okay, Brad, final minutes we're here with you. Just give us your thoughts on the upcoming game, what the Canucks need to do to win next game here.
Well, for starters, let's start playing ice in the middle of the ice and get in front of the net here. Like, every time maybe we're in the offensive zone, we're doing circles around the perimeter. They're just going to get nothing in front, and they got to bury these chances. Like, there's been some close ones in front where they're overpassing, I think. Especially Pettersson was a bit surprising. I don't know what's wrong with JT Miller, but he just needs one. Whether it's an empty netter or something, he just got to get going.
All right. And, you know, Brad, that's pretty much – we're going to wrap it there for this Into the Podverse segment. Thanks for jumping on with us as the debut guest for this segment, Brad. You know, it's been a while since we've actually been able to have you on a roundtable with the Larchcast, but you're doing great things now with Point Shot Hockey, so, you know, we're happy to see you succeed there. Best of luck with everything, Brad, and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Wes, you as well. Nice to talk to you guys. Have a good one.
Have a good one, buddy.
See you later.
Thanks, Brad.
Take care. Just, and that was, of course, our Into the Podverse segment that we have debuted today. And go ahead, Sat.
Yeah, I was just going to bring in some more texts we got about the jerseys. And you know, we got this one from Chris in Duncan. We don't want to go down the road of soccer football with a different kit every year. Every time I turn EPL on, I have no clue who's playing because of it, because of the overabundance of jerseys. So that's from Chris in Duncan. And then we have another text here from Keith in Qualcomm Beach. Ditch the whale, bring back Johnny Canuck with a rink and stick on the shoulders, white, green, and blue. That's another thing we didn't discuss is the Johnny Canuck logo. I mean, it's kind of legendary with the...
I bought the Johnny Canuck green jersey. I liked it. You know, I wore it a few times to the games, and people thought, you know, we were speaking highly of it. What's that?
Like the one that he's kind of like jumping or skating or something?
No. Yeah, he's just skating, you know, Lumberjack Johnny there. And I actually thought that would have been a nice third jersey there, but I guess maybe too green and... You know, not really, besides the logo of Johnny Canuck itself, the colors are just kind of random there. But you guys know that jersey I'm talking about, that green Johnny Canuck, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's a good jersey, but it's kind of gimmicky for me. It doesn't scream big leagues.
It's an American League jersey. I always thought that the Johnny Canuck logo was a better shoulder patch. I don't think it makes a main logo.
Agreed.
All right. Well, anyways, coming up next, we got Joey Kenward of Kenward's Corner coming up here. Stick around. You're listening to the Larchcast here on Saturday morning on the home of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650.
Time for Sportsnet Today. This is the Larchcast on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
For 1 second.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. As you just heard in that deeply gravitas voice, you are with the Larchcast on Sportsnet 650. Ryan here with Sat, Nav, TJ, and Joey, and producer Joel Gaudette working the switchboards for us. We're going to have Joey Kenward joining us in just a moment here, and we're going to be discussing the the Canucks fall to the Jets 2-0 last night, and where this team sits. And Joey, as always, with all of our guests, he's brought to you by HBD Homes Limited. They're a design build new home builder with over 20 years of experience. They specialize in new home construction, laneway homes, and renovations. You can visit them at their website, hbdhomes.ca, their Instagram page at HBD_homes, or call 778-968-1491. But before we get to Joey, we're going to have Sat give us a quick update on our poll question for the day.
Yeah, absolutely. And our poll question today is, if Travis Hamonic is healthy, who comes out of the Canucks lineup? And we got four options for you. Three, really. We got Olli Juolevi, Jordy Benn, Tyler Myers, and our last option is no one. And we have about 600 votes so far on this poll question, and leading the way is no one, 45%. So it seems that most people are happy with the way the defensive core six are going right now, and don't want to really mess with that chemistry. And we want to hear from you as well, so make sure you do vote on the Twitter poll question there, or do a text to us on the Dunbar Lumber text line, 650-650, and definitely want to hear from you. So without further ado, let's bring on Joey Kenward. Joey, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you doing this morning, guys?
We're doing all right. I mean, we're hoping for a different outcome yesterday, but, given the 2-0 loss to the Jets, it was a much closer game than even 2-0 seems. It was a 1-0 game for most of it, and pretty back and forth. I mean, I think Jets probably carried most of the play, maybe more than 50% of the play, but what were your thoughts on the game last night?
I thought it had a real playoff-like feel to it, and not just because it was a low-scoring game, but there was some real high-end chances at both ends of the ice. You had good goaltending. There wasn't a lot of special teams. But at the end of the day, far too many missed opportunities probably cost the Canucks this one. You know, when you look at the stat sheet after all is said and done, Vancouver had 29 shots on goal, okay? For a team that had come off one of their best all-around performances of the year, you thought, well, maybe they could put the pedal down a little bit more now that they were back on home ice. 29 shots in a game, not that bad. However, another 34 attempts, never even tested. Lauren Brossoit, they had 18 shots that were blocked and another 16 that missed the net entirely. When you were given grade-A chances like the Canucks were last night, you have to be able to bury some of those. And against a team like Winnipeg that doesn't give you much ice to work with, that was, I thought, a few opportunities too many missed by the Canucks shooters last night to try to break the shutout bid of the local goaltender. And as a result, they get no goals for their efforts and find themselves not moving any further up the standings in the division.
Yeah, it's an interesting one to see, Joey. I know the term maybe moral victory for the way they played last night might be thrown around, and I think we can all agree we're probably past the point of moral victories being enough here. But I just wanted to talk and get your opinion on, like you mentioned, the amount of shots that didn't find their way to the net right now. And to me, that seems to be guys like JT Miller, even though he's scoring well, and Petey, even though he started to find his scoring touch a little bit now, there's a split-second hesitation there where maybe they're not confident with their shots, and that's allowing the defenders on the other side of the ice to kind of get in these shooting lanes and make things easier for the goaltender. And also, I think maybe they're trying to pick the corners of the net to try and get these goals. Is this just a case of where you feel like the offensive guns for Vancouver are trying to force it, or is there something you're seeing in their systems that are maybe leading to this happening?
No, might be, using that old hockey phrase, gripping the stick a little bit too tightly. This team, you've got to work to get it, but I think they're overdue to have a little bit of puck luck go their way as well.
Agreed.
Particularly on home ice. You know, you look at the chances, particularly early on in the second period that Pettersson had. He was all alone between the hash marks, and give credit to Brossoit, came up with a pretty decent save on the glove hand. And then Pettersson through the back door on the next shift just couldn't tuck it inside the post. Those are normally when we've seen Pettersson, when he's in those positions with very, few defenders, if any, around him, it's usually money in the bank. A player like JT Miller, I know he scored the other night in the blowout in Calgary, and that was a big goal that he scored. against the Flames that got momentum back on Vancouver's side, and that was one of his better games in a long time. He's still a player that you want to see shoot the puck more. And those two guys have been the engine drivers for this team since they've been on a line together last season. It carried on into the playoffs. It just hasn't been the same here through the first 20 games, 20 plus games now of this season. So, as so often is the case, your best players have to be your best players most nights if you want to win. And right now, that's imperative for this hockey club. If they want to get back on track and stay in the race with teams above them in the standings that haven't pulled too far ahead of them, they're going to need the likes of Miller, Pettersson, and others to be able to cash in on any chances they get.
Joey question here. 21 games into the season, let's like look at the back end for the Canucks here. I think personally, from my point of view, the most surprising member of the Canucks defense so far has been Olli Juolevi. Would you be able to talk about how he's been able to finally transition into the Canucks lineup after so long of being the guy to not finally break through and to the point where he's outplaying Matthew Tkachuk when they play the Flames?
Well, Corey Hirsch and I talked about this a few different times on last night's broadcast. There's no question that Juolevi's game has improved as he's played more at this level. And that's more often than not the case with rookies, no matter what position they're playing. I thought he's been very steady in all three zones. He certainly has looked more comfortable when he has the puck trying to get out of his own zone. He's actually been not a bad player when getting his shots from the point through traffic on goal. Although he's not going to be noted at a big offensive producer at this level, that's still a positive sign. But here's the thing. I think there's a big reason why we're talking more about Olli Juolevi. The fact that he's been playing alongside Tyler Myers, that's a big reason why we're noticing him. And I don't think it's any coincidence that we're talking more about Olli Juolevi because Tyler Myers might be playing his best as a Canuck since joining this team.
Yeah.
You know, these two guys, and it'll be interesting to see if the coaches make any changes for tomorrow's game on the blue line compared to last night or even the previous four games, because they haven't tinkered at all with their defense pairs. Myers is alongside Juolevi. Hughes skating alongside Ben. Edler still paired up with Schmidt. A big reason why this team has been able to get out of the funk that they've been in, to have good starts to hockey games, albeit last night wasn't the start they were hoping for, but more often than not, the last 7 to 10 days, they've started games really well. They've done a great job of keeping their opponent to the perimeter of the ice, and they've done a very good job of exiting out of their zone without careless turnovers, minus a couple of glaring ones here and there, that it doesn't surprise me that we're talking more in a positive light about Olli Juolevi than fans were before. And I think a lot of that has to do with the play of Tyler Myers and arguably him playing his best hockey as a Canuck.
No, I got to agree with you, Joey. The defense has played better. Now, jumping off that, our poll question today was, you know, kind of related to the defense with Hamonic. So if Hamonic returns here, and hopefully in the next week or two, whenever he comes back, what would you do if you're Travis Green? Like, who would you replace him with? Would you, you know, keep the lineup as it is, or would you take out Juolevi or Ben or Myers? Like, would you replace Hamonic into the lineup with one of those three players?
It's going to be a question that might have a completely different answer whenever Hamonic is back healthy. Let's say you asked me this question yesterday, okay? Say Hamonic yesterday was given a clean bill of health. He was declared game ready. I wouldn't have brought him back in because I think Vancouver's defense prior to last night's game had been pretty stable with the defense pairs that I mentioned. But who knows? Whenever Hamonic is ready to return, we won't know how the other defensemen will have played between now and then. We don't know the injury status. This is assuming everybody continues to stay healthy. I know if you're a Canucks fan right now, when you hear that, you're knocking on any piece of wood that's within arm's length. So I don't know if you can really answer that right now. If he was ready tonight and ready tomorrow to play the Jets, and if he had all of those players, I don't know if I'd bring him in. If I would be required to bring Hamonic back in, probably the defenseman that would come out would be Jordy Benn. But right now, I don't even know if you can fairly ask or answer that question until Hamonic is back. And when he's back, whenever that might be, it might be an easy decision to make based on either how the team is playing or if other players are on the sidelines.
All right, we're talking to Joey Kenward here on the LarshCast, home of the Vancouver Canucks on Sportsnet 650. Joey, sticking with the back end of the ice there, the utilization of the goalies this year has been a little strange at times. And, you know, Braden Holtby was coming off a great appearance against the Calgary Flames. And, you know, some would suggest that he should have got the net last night. But, you know, Demko hasn't been bad. And, you know, Demko had a good performance last night as well. So, I mean, what are the Canucks going to do for, you know, Sunday's game? Is it just as simple as, you know, you lose, next guy goes in? Or do you get the sense that the coaching staff really wants to give Demko a true run here?
No, I know there's a lot made about that, especially with the way Holtby performed in a victory where the team in front of him put up five goals. Like, Braden Holtby was one of the best Canucks on the ice at the Saddle Dome earlier this week. I thought he was probably going to get the start yesterday, but I will say this, didn't surprise me that Thatcher Demko got the start last night. You know, he's had some positive results on home ice his last couple of games. He got the team get a point in overtime against Calgary. He was very good, only allowing one the game before in the victory against the Flames. And knowing the way the schedule is right now, they want to make sure both goaltenders are still getting minutes right now. I don't think it's at a time, and there's others that will disagree with me, I don't think it's at a time right now where one goalie has outperformed the other to say, give the ball to this guy and let him run with it. I don't think that's the case at all. I would expect that Holtby probably gets the start tomorrow, but Thatcher Demko was one of the best Vancouver. In fact, he might have been the best Vancouver Canuck last night. His play very well could have warranted another start and another crack at the Jets. Braden Holtby's career numbers against Winnipeg are fantastic. Maybe he gets the call in trying to get the series split. I can see why it, as it always is in this market, seeming to be a hot-button topic as to why one goalie's playing over the other. But I think the goaltending has, the last couple of games, all you can ask for your goaltenders is give your team a chance to win. And I think in the last few appearances that both Holtby and Demko have made for Vancouver, they've done just that. They might not have gotten the end result they wanted, but they've certainly given the team in front of them a chance to have success.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think everybody in this market is so quick to want to label which one of them is the 1A and 1B. And I think the fact that we even have goaltenders that were, you know, despite the Canucks' troubles, that we're having that conversation with is likely not a bad thing.
Well, and remember, Demko's the only of the two who's played more than two in a row.
True.
Okay?
Yeah.
Holtby has only had one stretch all year where he's played back-to-back games.
Yeah.
And those were in the last two games in Toronto. Demko has done it a couple of times, but he's only played three straight once. And it was in the three-game homestand against Calgary where the games were spaced out. Play, day off, play, day off, play. So if people think that all of a sudden right now that where they are in the standings and knowing how big a mountain it is to climb, that they're just going to give the keys to the car for one of these goalies to carry the mail here for five or six in a row, I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that. Joey, I want to shift the conversation. I know last week I asked you about the Tanev effect or the Toffoli effect coming back with the chip on their shoulder and playing against this team. But I want to talk about the Tanev effect from a different angle right now in terms of the effect that he's had leaving his previous defensive partner and with joining Noah Hanifin on the Calgary Flames. I didn't have time to do the math here, but I was just looking at this, and it looks like last year going from a plus player in Quinn Hughes to a minus 13, whereas Tanev has turned, I would argue, Tanev has turned Hanifin into a solid shutdown defenseman with him. They're both plus three sitting on the Calgary Flames right now. Is it as simple as it looks on paper of Tanev just makes his defensive partner significantly better on the defensive side of the puck? Or is this just Tanev walking into the right situation and Quinn Hughes really missing him? Or where do you attribute that massive swing in plus minus to?
Yeah, it's such a startling stat that you just wouldn't see be connected to one player from one season to the next. But it's a stat.
It is bizarre.
Fact, right? It's a bizarre stat, but it is fact, and the numbers don't lie. I will say this, that, you know, Chris Tanev is his Canucks fans have been pretty blessed to have a player of the caliber of his stature playing the way he does for the better part of a decade. There's not a lot of people outside of this market that know how good a defenseman Chris Tanev is. And I think people in Calgary, even if they're only one province away and only saw him, you know, no more than five times a year, they have realized in a real hurry how steady an influence he is for those around him, and particularly whoever's skating alongside him night in and night out. And that's not to say that whoever Quinn Hughes has been playing alongside has been poor, okay? However, collectively as a team, particularly through the first couple of weeks, Vancouver defensively really struggled to get the puck out of their own zone. And even when they did get it out across the blue paint, they were turning the puck over at center ice, and then before they knew it, they were fishing the puck out of their own net. And when Quinn Hughes plays as many minutes as he does, even as a young defenseman, you know, when your team's getting scored on and when your team's trying to come back into games, when he's on the ice, you know, there's the chance that he's going to get scored on more. You're out there to have him hopefully helping the team score goals and spend more time at the other end of the ice. So, yes, it's a startling stat. It's a very unique circumstance that we talk about it because of the number shift from one defenseman who's played with Tanev to the other, now playing in Calgary. But, you know, collectively, I think it's been a team effort as to why Vancouver's defensive results for the first few weeks of the season where they were. And it wasn't just hung on one player. I know people will stare at that minus column next to Quinn Hughes' name saying, how's the highest scoring defenseman in the league got the worst plus minus in the league? I think it's not only on him. It was a collective effort defensively as to why some of those numbers were so startling.
So can I ask then, Joey, tying back to where does Hamonic land in this lineup, I think most people would agree that Hamonic might be the closest comparable to what Tanev brought. Do you see him as a potential solution, or do you think that maybe he's not quite the same player as Tanev is and might not be a good fit there?
Well, Travis Hamonic, there's a reason they went out and got this guy, to be able to hopefully be the type of player he's proven to be in the league. And I'm not just talking when he's played for Calgary, but when he started his career on Long Island, a pretty good, steady defensive defenseman first who can be reliable in all three zones. And, you know, Chris Tanev maybe didn't put up point totals that Travis Hamonic has done in the past, but that's the type of player they were looking to get when Tanev moved to Calgary. And I feel bad for Hamonic because a guy that has been riddled by the injury bug that took last year off in the bubble for Calgary for personal and family reasons, that he wanted nothing more than to be able to get playing games, regardless of whoever team it would be with. And I think it's the type of player defensively Vancouver knew could help them. But, you know, they haven't been able to rely on him because he's been hurt. And when he gets back in, they hope that when he is 100% healthy, he can be that type of player he's been in the past. They're going to need a guy like that to get back into the race. Obviously, they need to score goals. They've got to be able to collectively get a better offensive effort up and down their lineup to win hockey games. I like the way they've played defensively as a group here the last week in a bit. But if he comes back, that's just an extra steady defensive defenseman that comes into the mix, which at the end of the day, if you're trying to move up the standings, you're not only going to have to score goals, but you're going to have to defend as well. And I'm sure whenever he's back, he'll be a welcome addition on that Vancouver blue line.
The Canucks have been 2-3-1 since Tyler Mott got injured on February 6th against Toronto. How much of an effect do you think it has on the team not having somebody who can play at both ends of the ice and be that ultimate disruptor in a Canucks uniform that Tyler Mott is?
Yeah, well, it certainly has an effect because when you look at him and I don't know, does he still lead the league in hits?
He had 70 in 15 games.
I mean, that's an impressive total. That tells you right away that even if the team had been chasing a lot of games, that he was engaged. He was physical. and wanted to be an effective player whenever he hopped over the boards, and he was that. That's the type of player, and I mentioned this with you guys before, and I've mentioned this on other shows, not only here in Vancouver, but when people are talking Canucks hockey across the country, that's the type of player that coaches love to have at any given point in the game. You know, a guy that brings high energy, you can put him out to kill penalties. If you need a good, solid physical shift to try to take away momentum from a team, that's a guy that Travis Green could look down to on his bench at any time and say, "Bot, let's go." And, you know, who knows how long he's going to be out for. It could be longer than some people might have been thinking. But that's a guy they miss. There's no doubt that's a guy they miss. They've played good hockey since his absence. They've gotten some points. But that's the type of guy you want to have in your lineup every night, no matter where you find yourself in the standings. And Canucks fans can only keep their fingers crossed that it's not a lengthy absence for Tyler Mott, because he certainly, probably during the first 15 games of the season, was the unsung hero on this Canucks roster.
All right, Joey, thanks for this. Just one final question. I want to get your thoughts on the NHL Outdoors and the game at Lake Tahoe between the Avs and the Golden Knights today. Are you going to be watching?
Yeah, that's such a cool setting, isn't it? Like, I mean, it's completely made for television with the backdrop. Hopefully the weather's good. You talk to any player around the NHL who has had the experience to play in an outdoor game, you know, that's maybe for them a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity when playing NHL hockey. The dimensions of the rink are still the same. Goalposts are still the same height, still the same width. Glass is still the same. Boards are still the same. But, boy, it's just going to feel so much different when you step onto the ice and feel that wind coming off the shores of Lake Tahoe hitting you in the face. I look forward to being a really entertaining game today. I know the players look forward to it, but make no mistake about it. When the puck is dropped, those will be two hungry hockey teams that don't want to let any inch of ice up for grabs. It should be a pretty entertaining matchup.
All right. Thanks again, Joey. Talk soon.
Thanks a lot. Look forward to being back in the booth with Hershey tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, Canucks and Jets. And a quick plug for our Vancouver Canucks alumni family. We've got two of the best BC-born hockey players ever to make it to the NHL that are going to be on Canucks Connected later on this afternoon on Sportsnet 650. They've both been inducted into the BC Hockey Hall of Fame and the BC Sports Hall of Fame. Former forwards Cliff Ronning and Darcy Rota are going to join our program at 3 o'clock this afternoon. So I encourage you guys to tune in. You young guys who didn't see them live, I hope you enjoy the stories that they've got to share from their playing days at the Pacific Coliseum.
Absolutely. Thanks again, Joey. You're listening to the LarshCast here on Sportsnet 650, home of the Vancouver Canucks. Back in a minute.
It's amazing, I'm the reason everybody fired up this evening.
This is Sportsnet Today with the LarshCast. Now hear your boys on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Okay, welcome back to the LarshCast here on Saturday, February 20th. In the back half of the show here, and we just discussed all things Canucks with Joey Kenward last segment. We had quite a large discussion on Travis Hamonic and, you know, whether he's going to be back in the lineup anytime soon, and if so, who does he take out? Who does he supplant? That's also the topic of our poll question. You can find that on Twitter at Sportsnet650. And the question is, if Travis Hamonic is healthy, who comes out of the Canucks lineup? Juolevi, Ben Myers, or nobody? And you know what? We had no one leading the polls at the beginning of the show with 45%. It's about 46% now, but Jordy Benn's creeping up there. So it seems that the love that Jordy Benn's had over the past few games is kind of wearing away. And maybe that's a byproduct of how the game went last night. And maybe, you know, Quinn Hughes needs to be afforded an opportunity to maybe jump up a bit more and have that, you know, defensive defenseman have his back in the defensive zone. So, you know, Travis Hamonic could be a welcomed addition if the Canucks' offensive woes can continue for more than this one game. So we'll see how it goes tomorrow. You know, Canucks and Jets go again tomorrow, 7 p.m. here on Sportsnet 650. Ryan, so, you know, you had that discussion and that question for Joey on Travis Hamonic. I know off air we were talking about how how, you know, you like the response there. So what are your thoughts on Travis Hamonic coming back into the lineup perhaps in the next couple of weeks?
Oh, man, you know, it's a tough one for me, guys, because I get the wanting to, as this team is starting to settle in and be more comfortable with these defensive pairings, who are they going to take out of the lineup? To me, it just, how can we solve what's happening with Hughes on the defensive woes? His minus, you know, like nobody's going to argue that this guy's driving the bus offensively, but I don't, honestly, of the three, I don't care who it is. To me, I guess I would have to say Ben, just because Ben is kind of our most defensive defenseman to play in that position. So there might be some redundancy when Hamonic comes into the lineup. But Ben's played really, really well, so it's tough. That's the problem. It's tough to make the argument for any one of these guys to come out. But I think one of them has to give Hughes the defensive partner that he needs. And to me, I think it's probably Ben. But again, I'm not... I'm glad I'm not the one making the decision on that.
Let me throw something by you there, Ryan. Let me throw this by you. Like, you know, we've seen Alex Edler. You know, he's going up in age, and I'm not suggesting that Alex Edler does not have a place on the Canucks blue line this year, but he is getting up in age, and the Canucks have played a lot of games. What do you think about, you know, letting Edler sit maybe a game here and there, you know, injecting Travis Hamonic to play with Hughes, and that way Jordy Benn can go play with someone, you know, like Ole Ulevi, which might actually help Ulevi bring out his offensive game. Like, he's been really impressing me lately in his ability to jump in the play. A couple of times in the last game on Friday, he was, you know, the screen in front of Brassois. So I think there's an opportunity there as well if you want to have Ben and Hamonic in the lineup.
You know, I love the idea of the maintenance day, especially like we're looking at a weird season where we didn't have a preseason. We've got a short truncated schedule where they're playing a lot of games, back-to-backs, a lot of things like that. And I know we've talked about this before in previous iterations of this show, but the wear down effect, Edler does not look as good in back-to-back games. And the Canucks have played a lot of hockey already. The only concern I'd have is maybe what effect that has on Edler emotionally, because he's a prideful guy, you know, but I think that could potentially be an option. It's a solution to get Hamonic in to see if he's a fit. I don't think it's anything you can stick with. They'd have to get him back in the lineup pretty quickly and find, you're still faced with the problem of taking somebody out of the roster that has kind of earned a spot right now. Yeah. But Nav, what do you think? Where do you think the Canucks can go with this decision?
Well, jumping on the Alex Edler point, there's, if the Canucks were a little bit better in the standings, yeah, I would totally agree. So, yeah, he's getting older. They've played more games than anybody else in the NHL. So, yeah, sit him for a game, rest him, let him reset. But they're falling behind day by day, so you just can't do it. I mean, Hamonic did not look great. I mean, regardless of the fact that he hadn't played in a year, they can't risk it. Like, we can't have those excuses that he hasn't played in a year. Now he hasn't played again in a month. So as bad as it is, I'm the only one you can kind of move out of there. They're kind of out of options. You can get Ben off, or you can just let Hamonic sit till, you know, there's an injury. Like Joey said, he goes, this might be a moot point in 3 weeks because he might have an injury, or, you know, Tyler Myers or somebody could not be playing well. And, you know, the question will be answered by itself. But right now, I mean, you can't take out Edler. You can't take out Myers. You know, these kind of guys, as much as hate Myers gets or Edler gets after last night, you can't take these guys because they're NHL defensemen. And they, on this team, they're top four defensemen. And if you kind of start moving them out and putting in guys like Hamonic and Ben, I mean, that defense starts looking really poor really quickly. So, I mean, I think the answer is you got to leave it as is until there's an injury or, I guess, Ben. But, yeah, I wouldn't touch it because they've been playing well.
Yeah, we got a text here as well. Sorry, this is unsigned. So make sure everyone you sign your texts. And again, it's 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. So this texter says, Edler in caps, let him rest a few games. He was a step behind last game. So I think that does go play into kind of what we were just discussing about giving Edler a maintenance day here and there to be able to keep him fresh for, you know, the stretch, the home stretch, if, you know, the Canucks are indeed still in it. So before we kind of get onto more discussion on the Canucks, I want to make sure that we can plug our next segment coming up here. We're going to have a segment, Is This Anything? So, you know, we want to discuss your potential rumors or conspiracy theories that surround the Vancouver Canucks. So make sure you have your submissions in. You can, again, text at 650-650 or, you know, use our Twitter handle and text at the LarshCast. Make sure you hashtag Is This Anything And, you know, at 11 o'clock here, we're going to discuss some of these conspiracy theories and you know, go back and forth and debate if there is anything to them or if they're just, you know, a bunch of hot air. So please do get your submissions in that we'll discuss them in the next segment. So transitioning a bit off of the defense here, we've focused a lot about the defense and goaltending today, but we haven't really talked much about, you know, the response of the Vancouver Canucks to, you know, Nils Höglander getting mauled by a bear, a 6'4" bear in Forbert last night at the end of the game. So what was the, you know, your guys' feelings and your takeaway from the team stepping up and, you know, coming to the aid of Nils Höglander? I mean, Travis Green said he expected it because you have this giant, you know, picking on the smallest guy on the ice, but Joey, I'll start with you. Do you take anything away from that, or is that kind of expected, or do you feel that's actually going to get the Canucks to play more as a team and give them a little bit of a lift going into the next game?
I'm almost guaranteeing that's going to light a fire under their butts. This is the first time I can remember the entire team jumping in to support somebody since, remember they played Toronto about 5 years ago and Stetcher got jumped in the corner and Ryan Miller, of all people, was the one to defend him?
Oh, yeah.
That's like the last time I can remember the Canucks really coming to somebody's defense. Like, remember when Matheson killed Pettersson during his rookie year? I don't think anybody even helped. Like, it's a good sign to see the boys coming around to support their star rookie. I like that. And especially because of what Höglander brings to this team. He is like the ultimate energizer bunny. That guy gets everything going. He mucks in the corners. He's got a great shot. He can make plays. And to lose him in this spot that the Canucks are in right now where they just have that one spark on that second line of Höglander, and he's playing great with Tanner Pearson. We can also talk about Tanner Pearson in a minute because I think you want to talk about the unsung hero for the Canucks since Tyler Mock got hurt. It's Tanner Pearson. But back to Höglander, I think it's going to be a big fire lit under the team's butts, and I think they're going to come out firing against Winnipeg tomorrow night. I'm expecting at least 10 hits from the boys in the first 10 minutes.
Wow. I mean, you know, guys, what I think we were missing last night, we were missing Brian Burke. And what I mean by that is we're missing a translator, because I like to ask the officials, what is Swedish for cross-check? What is one cross-check, two cross-check, three cross-checks? And, you know, I appreciate the fact the Canucks jumped in. You know, when a 6'4" guy was going after a 5'9" guy who's like outweighs him by like, what, 80 pounds or whatever. But the fact the officials allowed that to happen,
yeah.
First, because they never gave him a penalty for cross-checking a guy three times. That's ridiculous. And then second of all, you let that happen at the end of the game and it's a 4-on-4. Like, what's up with the officiating? I rarely, like, you know, like to talk bad about the officials because they have a tough job to do. It's the fastest game on the planet. But are you kidding? That's how you manage a game. You give that guy a 2-minute penalty, you kind of calm him down. They don't do that. So this guy's like, okay, I'm going to take another liberty. All you've done now is, you know, for the fans, the next game is going to be great because, you know, like Joey said, they'll probably come out hitting. There's going to be a lot of aggression in the game. But you're just setting this up to be either a fight or like probably another dirty, not a dirty hit, but like, you know, a hit that's not needed in the game. So I just wish the referees, the officials would have kind of played that a little bit better and kind of handled the situation a bit better, where it wouldn't have got to that. So, I mean, I don't know. It's frustrating to see, but I'm glad the boys kind of stepped up. Even Jake Virtanen got in there. I think he was great. I mean, I never talk well about him, but I was really impressed with what he did. He actually, you know, dropped his glove and maybe pushed the guy around, but, you know, he did something. He stepped up, so good on Jake there, you know.
All I can say is the Jets are lucky that Louis Erickson wasn't on the ice when that happened. Oh
here we go.
Was he going to make that right?
He would have put the puck in his own net?
Stone cold stunners, left, right, and center. He's taking everybody out.
Wow, well, he would have shot the puck into the empty net because that's the only way he can score, right? Because the goalie, I think, had moved about 5 feet to the right too. So
empty net, Lou. You know, it's interesting. I Nav, I couldn't agree with you more. It's great to see this team fired up, and like Joey said, like it's been a long, long time. The knock on this team has been coming to each other's defense, standing up for each other. To me, I like the optics of what happened last night as much as I like the actual event because, you know, we've discussed it on this show. You see it in the Twitterverse. It's all over the airwaves talking about whether there's a chemistry issue inside of this team. And it's moments like that make me hopeful that this team is going to get it figured out, that they're going to work as a partnership, you know, that they can come to bat for each other like that. That's a good sign of this team coalescing. And it also sends a message to the fans that, hey, we will fight for each other. We do stand up for each other. And hopefully that can quell some of the locker room mentality questions that have been out there that I've myself have raised and questioned about as well too. But do I think we're going to see an impact in this game tonight? Well, I do, but I also think, like Nav said, we're going to see a situation where the refs need to do a better job of game management, especially when you've got teams that already don't like each other playing four games in a row back to back. There's so many built-in rivalries. You have to, as a ref, stop this game from getting chippy. You need to protect the players on the ice, especially when a smaller player is vulnerable to a larger player like that. I think, Nav, you're 100% right. There needs to be a penalty called there. You need to set the tone that getting chippy and you know, trying to take a pound of flesh won't be tolerated this year, because by the end of this season, when these guys have played each other 9-10 times, you're just going to see somebody doing an overhand with a stick or something, you know, the old Brashear style something, as emotions boil over. So I think there needs to be a bit of a game management, but yeah, that's my kind of take on that.
All right, and always, you're listening to the LarshCast on the home of the Vancouver Canucks on Sportsnet 650 and Sportsnet Today. So, you know, sticking with that a bit about the penalties and the, you know, the referees and how they're calling the games here. There's a couple of obviously flagrant type of calls that were missed in the game on both sides, right? I mean, you can't say the Canucks were screwed out of a win here, but at the end of the day, you know, it's still a regular season game, and a penalty is a penalty, especially if it leads to an opportunity, an offensive opportunity for the team that's committing the foul. And there was one egregious play in the Canucks defensive zone where, you know, Ryan Miller was, it looked like a trip on TV and it looked like a trip live, and the referee standing, it's not Ryan, that's a...
I was going to say JT Miller, yeah, but JT, I think we Miller, all knew.
Sorry. Yeah. He was tripped in the defensive zone and the puck came out front and Demko had to make a series of saves there. So something like that needs to be called, no matter if it's mm-hmm. the Canucks, you know, committing the foul or the opponent, because that has a direct impact on how that game, you know, the outcome of the game could be. So, yeah. I mean, it's tough that the refs want to let the players decide the game, but at the end of the day, that's a decision by a player to commit a foul that needs to be called, yeah. Right? So I think it kind of goes both ways there.
But, Sat, you know, so,
go ahead.
So, I was just going to say before you go here, Nav, The two words for me are negates or creates. You know, I love the let them play mentality. I do like it when they kind of put the whistles away to a certain degree, as long as they're consistent with how they're creating. But if you are committing a foul that either negates a scoring chance for the other team or creates a scoring chance for your team, that has to be called every time, because like you said, Sat, that's affecting the flow of the game, and that's also affecting your superstars players' confidence to go out and make these moves and know that they're not going to have somebody water skiing off the back of them as well, too.
But see, guys, this is the issue I have, and I'm not sure so much if it's an issue or it's something that, you know, we need to get over, is there any other sport besides hockey where the referees change the calls depending what, you know, what game it is or what time of the game it is? Like, you know, in football, let's say, like, if it's a pass interference in the preseason game or, like, game week one, it's a pass interference in the Super Bowl, you know?
Well, don't let TJ hear that.
Oh, yeah. Besides TJ, don't wake him up, or he's sleeping. Let him sleep.
He napping.
But that's the thing, like, in hockey, you know, we always hear this mentality. I've said it, we're all guilty of it. Well, you can't call that penalty. You can't call tripping with 2 minutes left. Of course you can't. If it's a trip
it's a penalty.
It's a penalty. Call it. Like, it should be on the player for not making a boneheaded move. I don't care what time of the game it is. Just like in football or basketball or baseball, whatever. If it's a strike in baseball in the first inning, it's a strike in baseball in the ninth inning. And I think hockey needs to get to that. Like, so the onus has to be put on the players. Like, hey, listen, if you don't want a penalty, don't do the deed. So I don't know what you guys think about that, but that's just my
I think that's
a
great point, because there's different types of penalties, right? Like a trip, it's black and white. Even if a player steps on someone else's stick and they fall, you know, that's called a trip more times than not. Mm-hmm. When it's a battle in front of the net, or it's a battle up the ice and there's a chippy penalty called, or they both get a penalty, that's the kind of stuff that you can let play, let it go. But, you know, if you got Sidney Crosby going up the ice and he's carrying the play into the offensive zone and he's, you know, he's got the puck on a string, and then you know, he gets a stick in between his legs and he kind of falls to one knee. That's a penalty, right?
Yep.
It has to be. Whether it's Sidney Crosby, as I mentioned, or if it's, you know, anyone else on the fourth line. If there's flow to the game that gets disrupted by a stick infraction, that needs to be called.
Totally true. It's that, you know, let's take it back to what Nav said as well, too, where he's making the reference to baseball and what's a strike and what's not a strike. Can you imagine how frustrating, how much more frustrating to watch baseball would be, because it's already pretty frustrating to watch, in my opinion. But if the strike zone changed from inning to inning, or if it grew, if it doubled in size, if a team was down a couple runs or whatever, like that would that sport would become an absolute joke overnight with that mentality. And that's kind of what we see in the NHL, and it is kind of this evolving ref mentality, and we're so numb to it at this point now. But Nav, you're 100% right. If it's a penalty, it's a penalty. Start of the game, end of the game, overtime, doesn't matter. I just want to see it called with consistency.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's shift gears here, because I don't think we actually planned on talking about penalties and refereeing after a game that was actually pretty close, and I don't think we're blaming the refs for the Canucks' loss here.
It's a conspiracy theory for is it anything? Conspiracy. Come on. Absolutely.
Why do Toronto is involved. Toronto is involved. They called. We got screwed again.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to the a couple other things I wanted to bring up here was the I guess the lack of finish that we've seen from, you know, the third line and namely, you know, Adam Gaudette. Like, that third line's got a lot of things going on. Like, Antoine Roussel isn't really, you know, I see his number 26 on the ice. I see him go back and forth, but nothing really happens. And then Brandon Sutter, who scored goals but for some reason can't get an assist, and maybe that's because Adam Gaudette can't put the puck in the net. Like, this line is so strange that they seem to get opportunities, but nothing happens for them. And at some point, they need to chip in with a goal, and Gaudette's got to hit the net. But I think he's also, you know, got to use his winger and his center a bit more as well. What do you guys think of how, you know, the season's gone for Adam Gaudette? And I'll start with you, Nav.
You know what? He looks great out there. You know, between, you know, blue line to blue line, he looks great. He's got the speed. He's got, you know, decent set of hands. But like you said, I mean, is this just what Adam Gaudette is? Are we waiting for him, like, oh, he needs to do this better? But maybe this is just his skill level. Like, hitting the net, I mean, it's easy for us to say hit the net. But that's a skill, to pick a corner. Like, to me, all I ever see him do is either he shoots it wide right over the net, or he hits it right in the goalie's crest. Like, how many times did he hit Markstrom in the crest? Like, right on the chest. I mean, maybe that's just his ability. Maybe this is, you know, his ceiling, that he's not going to get better. I hope I'm wrong, because as we were discussing off break there before, Sad, is like, we had the same feelings of Ryan. I'm not comparing him to Ryan Kessler, because he's not Ryan Kessler. But when Ryan Kessler came into the league, you know, he did a lot of the little things right defensively. He was okay. But when it came to offensively, like, he would have these opportunities because he had, you know, he had the speed, he had decent set of hands, but he would never hit the net, or he would shoot it right at the goalie. So, I mean, we can hope that, you know, Gaudette goes slightly the Ryan Kessler way, but I, you know, I'm not too sure. I'm not sure he has the skills to be, you know, even a 15 goal scorer. So I don't know. What do you think, Ryan?
It's totally true. You know, I think I'm so glad that we referenced this comparison to Kessler thing, because I think physically, even a little bit, the way he skates, you know, his proclivity to shoot and maybe miss the net instead of passing, these all sound like things that we dealt with Kessler as well, too. Now, I agree, it's probably a little bit premature to start making any of these sort of comparisons, but this is a guy who needs to learn how to use his wingers properly, who needs to see the larger picture on the ice. To me, he's got all the tools in the toolbox, and like you mentioned, now from blue line to blue line, he's done a pretty reasonable job. He's been pretty serviceable, you know. And let's also mention, and thanks to producer Joel Gaudette here for referencing the fact he was on a line, Gaudette was, with Nils Höglander last night, who is, as we've mentioned, our energizer bunny, and he still wasn't able to look like he was starting to get the offensive side figured out. So to me, it's, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago, does he have to look at doing something like Vertanen does? Does he need to specialize? Does he need to focus on being a more of a bottom six guy and less on the offense and more on a rounded game? But guys, they've got to get it figured out, because if the top line's not scoring, we know the bottom six is a bit of an offensive black hole. Like, these goals need to come from somewhere. And you know, we need to feel like those bottom six players, especially guys like Gaudette, who do have an offensive upside, can kick in. But Joey, what are your thoughts here? How have you assessed his play so far?
Adam Gaudette has been... like, I don't even know if there's a word to describe it, because he's doing things right, but nothing's going right. He's got the speed, he can gain the zone well, he's finding the right spots on the ice, he's getting chance after chance, but he's either missing the net or he's shooting it right in the crest. It's astounding to me, because Gaudette scored in the first game of the year against Edmonton. And immediately my thought was, okay, here we go, he's wearing 96, this is going to be a good year. But this is probably going to transition. I'm not going to bring it up right away, but I have something for Is This Anything related to this. But I think Adam Gaudette, if given the opportunity to stay with somebody like a Nils Höglander, I think he will definitely find his game. I don't think you're going to be like becoming an offensive threat when you're playing with Brandon Sutter.
No, I agree with that. But even if you're watching Höglander, he's been great, but he hasn't scored much, right? Like, he's always right there. And I feel like the difference between the two players, and I think you guys will agree, is they're playing not similar styles, but they're right there. They're right there. Like Höglander misses a net by an inch, or he shoots it at the goalie. But I just feel personally, is I feel like Höglander's on the edge there, where he's gonna get it. He's gonna figure it out, and he's gonna start burying those goals. Whereas Adam Gaudette, I feel like it's going to go the other way. I mean, he's going to miss the net even further away. He's going to shoot even further wide. You know what I mean? Like, I see the comparison of the two players with the speed, and they both work hard. But Höglander, I feel, is just at the crest of, like, he's right there. And eventually some of these shots that he shoots wide, or he just misses, or he hits the post, I mean, he's going to start burying them and getting goals.
You know, that's a great point. I mean, with rookies especially, you see this. Like, they need to get used to the NHL game. And not just the flow of the game, but more of how to pick their corners, pick their spots, what shots to take, you know, 2 feet off the far side, whatever the case is, he's going to learn that. But the good thing is that he's getting the chances, and he's going to be able to get rewarded here coming up. But, you know, Joey, you kind of mentioned it. We got Is This Anything coming up in the next segment. So please do get your submissions in. We want to hear your rumors or conspiracy theories, and perhaps there's going to be one about the number 96 coming up in the next segment you may want to stick around for. So, as always, you're listening to the Larchcast on Sportsnet 650 and your home of the Vancouver Canucks on Sportsnet today. Einstein.
And now, introducing the starting lineup for the Larchcast. TJ, Ryan, Sats, Joey, and now on Sportsnet 650.
Everybody, welcome back to the show. As you just heard from a legendary Canucks arena announcer, Al Murdoch, we are the Larchcast on Sportsnet 650. We're going to be with you for the next hour, taking you right up until noon today. We're discussing all things Canucks, and we're just about to get into our second iteration of the brand new segment we debuted last week called Is This Anything? That's where we're going to engage with you guys. We've got some conspiracy theories, rumors that have been kicking around the NHL, whether they're Canucks specific or league specific. We want to hear from you. You can engage with us on the Dunbar Lumber text line and text in at 650-650. Let us know what your big conspiracy theory is. We're going to debate it on air and let you know if we think it is or isn't anything. And if you're sending out a tweet and engaging with us on social media, make sure to include the hashtag #IsThisAnything on it as well. And we sure enjoy this segment. We did it last week for the first time. And it's nice to kind of, we have a lot of conspiracy theories floating around in Vancouver, and to be able to kind of dissect them and see where everybody lands and whether we think there's any truth is kind of
can
a fun
I start?
Thing. Yeah, can yeah,
I
man. Start?
Okay, I got one that's, I just thought of like, you know, 5 minutes ago, and it's in the theme of the NHL outdoors at Lake Tahoe here, Avs and Golden Knights going later today, And we kind of brought it up and joked about the shiny helmets that the Golden Knights have, right? So I think my conspiracy theory is that they're doing this to definitely psych out the opposition. And I'm going to go out on a little bit of a limb and say that these will be outlawed before the end of the year by the NHL because of all the complaints that the opposing teams will have on this. What do you guys think? Is this anything, or is it just, you know, nothing?
All right, I'll start with this. I'll bring it back to the flying V So my dad's theory about this, little side note, my dad passed away 5 years ago on Thursday, so I just want to give a little shout out. Rest in peace, Jimmy Pitt. Love you, Dad. My dad always brought up the theory that they wore the flying V because the jersey was so ugly they could score two quick goals while the other team was laughing at them. So I think that Vegas is having the exact same theory with their shiny gold helmets. If you follow European hockey, you know the leading goal scorer has to wear a gold helmet for a gimmick reason, right? There's no reason that an entire team should have to wear it. I have no reason to believe that they won't have this outlawed by the end of the year. I think you guys are absolutely right.
It's actually, I'm not even mad. That's amazing.
I love it. Unique New York.
Joel's on it today, bud. But you know what? I gotta agree with you, but I don't think they're going to outlaw it because, listen, the NHL is going to do anything they can and everything they can to help the Vegas Golden Knights. They've already proven it with the expansion draft. They're not going to screw over the Golden Knights. Come on, that's their golden ticket in Vegas. They're going to be like, listen, you can wear gold. You can do whatever you want. Let's change your skates to gold. Anything, any advantage you guys can have, we're going to give you guys. All right, you know, good one, though, Sad. I think that's the truth. It's the truth.
I think so, too. And it's funny, actually. You know what? That was like a turducken of conspiracy theories from Nav there, because that was a conspiracy theory about Vegas while discussing another conspiracy theory. But that was impressive, man.
That's a theory within a theory within a theory.
It really is a, you know, turducken, like I say, yeah. A theory turducken. But, you know, here's the thing for me, guys. What's the one thing that's talked about every time they do one of these outdoor games? Guys got the eye black on, looking like a bunch of football players. They're talking about how glare off the ice is an issue. Mm-hmm. So you got a metallic helmet. That's extra glare, in my opinion, or it's a visual distraction. Not only that, you have American fans that talk about how they can't track the puck in real time. You throw a bunch of metallic helmets out there on the ice. Like, some of the casual fans are not going to have any idea what's going on out there, let alone the confusion from the players. I think this is definitely something. This is anything, because I agree. I think this is going to be a situation where by the time this year is closed, we're going to see some new rule in place about finish materials on helmets.
Joey, right, why would you say something so controversial yet so brave?
So I got another is this anything here in the text box here, Dunbar Lumber 650-650. Is this anything? The COVID vaccine causes the body to produce a new enzyme as a byproduct, different than the vaccines that inject dead virus for the body to generate immunity. Is that enzyme the real implant? This is from Jimmy in Anchorage. I'll start on this one. I don't think any of us here are qualified to make this kind of a statement.
Wait, hold on.
Here comes
TJ is a doctor.
No, I'm not saying I'm qualified, but he's suggesting the enzyme that's produced as a byproduct. First of all, this is Jimmy in Anchorage, Alaska. That's hilarious.
That's a great submission from Alaska. We love it.
So he's suggesting the enzyme that's produced as a byproduct in this unique COVID vaccine is the implant, like.
So it creates future, an enzyme implant.
For a future catastrophic or global event from the elites or something? That's maybe crazy. It's the Neuralink. Is this anything?
What does this mean for the Canucks, though?
Will this mean JT Miller's going to eventually be able to learn how to take a pass or make a pass?
Does this mean Louis Erickson's going to become a 30-goal-a-year scorer again?
This is an epic submission, got to say.
I love it. See, this is why we're here, guys. We want more of this. Really swing for the fences with us. You know. And I want to say, just as a side note to this, I know there's been a lot of talk about this vaccine and tracking. One of the single greatest moments of the rollout of this vaccine, I don't know if you guys saw it, was Bill Gates tweeted out a video of him getting the vaccine with the hashtag, I guess I can track myself now.
That's great. Okay, thanks again, Jimmy in Anchorage. And we got another one here. A couple of them here from, it's an unsigned text. Chris in the Hoof's got two. We'll start with this one. Hashtag, is this anything? Cole Lind has been moved to center in Utica because the Canucks are planning on trading Gaudette for draft capital. And I think this is a great submission.
Wow.
This is why we're here, folks.
All right. Any excuse to talk about my Kelowna Rockets boy, Cole Lind. All right. I'm all in on this.
All right. You start this one off, Joey.
All right. So I love Cole Lind. I think Cole Lind rules. I can't wait till this guy cracks the Canucks roster. I nearly bought his training camp jersey a few years back. That's how much I like this guy. So I think... Now, I'm not... for shipping out Adam Gaudette. I want to point that out right away. But the idea that they would switch a winger to center to try and fill a role that the Canucks have an abundance of, because if there's one thing the Canucks don't need, it's more centermen, unless they plan on shipping somebody out. So, but we might not have to read into it too much. They could just be preparing just in case Seattle takes a centerman in the expansion draft, right? So we can't completely say, oh, this is 100% fact. Cole Lynn's going to be up by the end of the year because Gaudette's getting shipped at the deadline. I can't say that that is something.
Yeah.
You know, to me, I like this. I like this take. I think there's something to this, but to me, it's a two-pronged approach. Yeah, one, you know, and you look at a guy like Sutter as well, too, as he was playing a little bit better. His name was bandied about as a trade rumor as well. It's nice to have that secondary. It's also just good to have a player that's versatile like that and can shift through all the forward positions. I would say there's not that much to the trade Gaudette thing, because really, with the way the league works right now with the bubble, you can pretty much only trade with the Canadian teams, especially as the season progresses, because you're losing 2 weeks to a mandatory quarantine anyways. I say this is maybe something, but it's more a case of trying to provide more depth at center as guys get injured and things shift and move out.
All right. So Joe, you got one of your own is this anything? You kind of teased it last segment. So what do you got?
All right. So Adam Gaudette is the second Vancouver Canuck in history to wear the number 96. The first one was Pavel Bure, obviously. He started wearing it at the... some guy, Russian Rocket, Pavel Bure. Some guy we drafted from the Soviet Union in the sixth round. I think he played like 2 years. Anyway, he wore it from the start of the 95-96 season till the end of the 96-97 season, in which he only managed to play 78 games, scoring 29 goals and 39 assists. Which doesn't sound terrible, but when you remember what Pavel Bure was capable of, he scored 60 goals back-to-back the years before that, and the year after that he scored another 50. So, is the number 96 cursed in Vancouver? Because it's not working out for Adam Gaudette. He's not the player he was when he wore 88 last year. Is this anything?
I think it is. I think it's one of those things that, you know, you choose a high number, and especially in hockey, it's a bit of a, you know, it's a cocky thing. I mean, going from 88
wasn't
to 96.
Wasn't it in Toronto somebody chose 98 and they made a big deal and it was so close
88.
To...
That was Nylander. But that's, I mean, yeah, exactly.
So it's close to Wayne Gretzky. Yeah. 99, 88, get out of here.
Hockey's strange that way. Like, it's, you know, if you remember, Brian Burke was always against the high numbers and, you know, only the players that really didn't have a shot to play had the high numbers. But I think... It's something to do probably with confidence more than anything else, right? You know, you have all these expectations that I'm gonna be a star with this number now, maybe. But you go, something goes, you know, wrong the first couple of weeks, and then confidence goes down.
I think also like you know, the way Bury left, maybe that number is
haunted,
you know, like it's just whenever somebody leaves in such a, you know, a fashion that, you know, the way Bury left, it leaves a stain.
Yeah.
And maybe that carries through. I don't know if anybody believes in superstition. It could be possible, right? So.
But he didn't leave Vancouver with 96, did he? Did he not go back to number 10? I think he had a year
either
or
way,
so that he played it.
Either way, 96 is not Bury's, like, number that we, you know, hold dear to heart. And also the way he left wasn't... amicable, so to speak, and so there's two things that are wrong with that equation. Yeah. Maybe it is really haunted.
I personally love the high numbers. I don't know why I know Sat just mentioned it there, why in hockey it's considered like being cocky, but I don't know, why is it considered being cocky if you have a high number? How is 88 more cocky than 17, or, you know what I mean? Like, I don't get that.
I don't, mentality. It's nonsense, man.
I think it's just silly. I think it's the old boys club, this is how they think. Like, I love Ryan Burke, but it's that mentality of like, oh, no, you can't have 88 or 97 or 94. Who cares? Yeah. You can have any number you want. I mean, if you go 0-0 if you want, if that was allowed, go for it. Do what you want.
Yeah.
But here's a text from Charles and Burnaby. But Louis never wore 96, so what happened to Louis?
then it's cursed. Then it's cursed.
That's a different type of curse I think we're talking about there, Charles. But
he's wearing Mason Raymond's number, though.
Here's a good submission from Adrian. Is this anything? Vertanen is only in the lineup because they are showcasing him.
Oh, I think so. I think so. You know, because at this point, like, he has been I'm sorry to say, and guys, we were doing it, we were making it, but here we are talking about this again.
46 minutes to spare. We were so close.
Yeah, you know, to me, he has been largely unnoticeable out there. I think ideally, maybe that's what they'd like to be doing. If you scratch him, his value diminishes greatly. But I think, honestly, the way he's playing right now, his value's not doing anything anyways. So, I don't think there's anything to that. I think it's more they're giving him the ice time to say, hey, look, this is your make or break year. Either you're going to show up for this team or you're not going to show up for this team. And I think it's we've all made arguments here about how he hasn't gotten the right line mates, the right amount of ice time, this, that, and the other. Well, he's out there for the most part. I mean, when they shorten the bench, he's not out there so much, but he's getting his opportunity. And to me, this is a show us or go. This is what you are. You know, I don't know. But, what do you think, Nev?
Ryan, the thing is, him playing is probably not helping his cause.
No, not at all.
Let's be honest. I think it's diminishing. I think him not playing is probably better for him because he's out there and other teams are watching and it's not looking good. I mean, he's not doing... I mean, I know I just complimented Murdy or how he kind of jumped in to help Hoglander, but so did everybody else. But, like, what is... Do you notice him out there? Do you notice him kind of make a play? He doesn't do anything to me.
Here's a good text on that note from Philadelphia Collins in Victoria. He's disagreeing with somebody's Gaudet take, but he says, on that note, I have to disagree with your take that Gaudet needs to reinvent himself like Virtanen has. Virtanen is a tire fire and has no identity other than the outlier game once a year.
Wow!
You know, TJ, on that point, I feel literally like it's got to a point now, they're playing him and Jim Benning's there sitting by his phone. And as Jake Virtanen does anything good for a game, because let's be honest, like, I was listening to the morning show yesterday with Cebulski, and they were saying, and I got to agree with them, is, listen, he's literally by the phone sitting there, and as soon as Virtanen does anything good, and it's inevitable, he's going to do something. I mean, come on, he's a NHL player. He's on the phone. He's like, hey, did you see that? You want me to send you a message? You want me to show you what's that video? He just scored a goal.
Didn't the Virtanen rumors, weren't they born when he was a scratch? He was a healthy scratch when the rumors started coming out.
I think
maybe there is some truth to taking him out of the lineup.
The healthy scratch, though, that's happened it's happened a few times, and it's something Travis Green has done with Jake, right? So, again, I think the healthy scratches is more just a coaching decision. But one thing about
Hold on. There's another great text here. How do you showcase something you can't see?
Wow.
You can't see him on the other
savage. Text.
That was savage.
The LarshCast universe is not holding their punches back today.
No. Well, one thing about Virtanen.
Another unsigned text. Would the best way to showcase Virtanen be to put him in quarantine right now?
Oh, man.
Okay, we got to get off of this now. Come on.
This is getting nasty.
This is getting mean.
So how about, I'll tell you what. I got my own one there, Sad, unless you've got another. Do you want to get a follow-up take? Okay, mine's not inflammatory, but I had this from this morning, and I know it's been floating around out there, that with the potential of Myers playing so well this season that he could be a target for the draft expansion, and the Canucks may look at not protecting him and finding a way to get out from that massive salary cap issue. I don't know what you guys think about that. I'll tell you, Sat, you were going to say something just a second ago, so let's go to you first. What do you think? Is there anything to that? Could we see Myers move in the expansion?
You know what? It's a tough one. Like, people may want Tyler Myers to be off the books, so to speak, right? You know, the people say off the books, but what is off the books going to get you? Is that going to get you Jalen Chatfield in the lineup more often? Because if that's the alternative, no, I don't want that. I wouldn't want to see that, right? Tyler Myers, take away his $6 million price tag for a moment. He is much more than a serviceable defenseman.
Agreed.
Right, and no, people always want to make a comparison to say like Troy Stetcher, and early in the year, oh man, Troy Stetcher was playing great. He's minus three last night, right?
Yeah.
The team got smoked, and he's on a bad team, and he's playing bad on a bad team, right? So, like, what are the other options? Tyler Myers is not a seventh defenseman, nor is he a sixth or a fifth. He's a true top four defenseman. He's not a 1-2. He's definitely a second pair defenseman, and $6 million. You know, he's the highest paid defenseman on the Canucks roster, but it's not like the Canucks defense is outlandishly overpaid, right? No. If you look at it as a whole. And next year, Edler's salary is going to go down even if he's back. So if you lose Edler because of maybe retirement or, you know, he's aging, and then you lose Tyler Myers in an expansion draft, and you're complaining about the defensive makeup of the team now, well, what are you looking for? Right? That's what I'm asking.
Just be careful what you wish for.
I don't think it's going to be an issue that Seattle will take Tyler Myers. I think it's going to be Braden Holtby that's going to be picked in the expansion draft. I have almost like 97% sure that it's going to be Holtby that goes. I don't think we have to worry about Myers going.
Well, even if you worry about Myers going, like, I mean, who are they going to protect, right? Hughes doesn't need to be protected, right? And then you have Ole Ulevi. Nate Schmidt. And then who's your third? Take your pick, right? There's not really many other options. And if you're just trying to expose Myers to get him selected, then you got other problems, right?
Agreed.
Because who's going to replace him, right? Like exactly like Sat said, there's no one to replace him. There's not that depth in this organization to replace a Tyler Myers. Love him or hate him, and people do both, but... And that being said, he's actually played better the last few games, right? He hasn't been horrible. Like, he scored that goal against Calgary. Defensively, he's been, you know, pretty decent. I mean, he hasn't taken the penalties he always takes. Though, that being said, if he was the one cross-checking the way Hoglander was getting cross-checked yesterday, yeah, he'd probably get about 18 minutes of penalties. But that's just, you know, that's just because Myers, you know, is not probably like. But he's played well, man. Let's give him some love. We crap on him all the time. He hasn't been horrible the last few games. He hasn't made the usual boneheaded mistakes. And listen... He's a top four defenseman. He might not be, like you said, he's not top three, but he's definitely a solid, solid number four. And, you know, it drops off pretty quickly after him.
I think with Myers, you know, when he has enough depth around him, like you got Schmidt that came in this year, really, really helped on that right side in terms of the offensive, you know, minutes that Myers might have been leaned on for last year. Now you have Schmidt to take that, you know, some of those duties. It really puts Myers in a perfect position to do what he can do best. And that's not too much on either end of the ice. You know, he's just in that perfect second pair role in terms of the ice time and the minutes and what he does on the ice. And he's thriving as a result of it. Last year, they asked him to do a little bit too much. I think he was leading the defensive unit, all the six of them, with ice time for almost the entire season. And then Quinn Hughes is the one who might have surpassed him at the end. But either way, this year he's in a much more comfortable role, and that's the result we're getting, is the Tyler Myers that maybe is more worth the money. And if he continues to perform this way, maybe you do want him, you know, whether or not you protect him, but he might be a good addition to the team that is going to be, you know, in 2 years from now, that when we have a chance to maybe build something with all that cap room, you know, and this next offseason is obviously the hardest one in terms of the books, but the one after that, there's room to navigate, maybe build a stronger team, whether that's through free agency or whatever means. But that's when the core and the cup run might start to take place for this team if they're going to do it. And Myers might be a good addition for that unit. So I don't know if you really want him off.
You know, TJ, you nailed it there, because it's one of those situations. And you guys know I've been harping on this for over a year now with Myers. If he sticks to what he's good at, sticks to being a bit more of a defensive style defenseman where he's not asked to do too much, the occasional rush, absolutely fine. But for the most part, he needs to be a middle of the ice slash stay at home defenseman. Having him come down from being on one of those top pairings, a little bit less ice time, a little bit less focused on trying to shut down superstars. He's been allowed to play that more simple game that I think allows him to be successful. So, and the other thing we mentioned too, is if they move away from him, it's not just who do they replace him with. It's how far is that drop off, because he has been very, very serviceable over the last couple of weeks. So to me, you know, even though I brought it up as a rumor, I don't think there's much to it. I think there's more to building around that core so he can continue to stick with what his confines are and what his talents are.
Yeah. I mean, okay, hold on, Sat.
Go ahead, Sat. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say that, you know, if the Canucks are able to acquire another defenseman, a right shot defenseman, then things change, right? Then absolutely it'll change. Like, they acquired Nate Schmidt, and now Nate Schmidt has that offensive capability that, you know, can go number two after Quinn Hughes. But you have to remember, in the bubble, when the Canucks were down against Vegas in the last game, who did they have out? They had Quinn Hughes and Tyler Myers out for the last 10 minutes of the game, it seemed. Right.
Yeah, so, and Myers was playing with a bum shoulder too. He came back early, and, you know, he still played effective enough to neutralize Alex Tuch. But yeah, I mean, he was just relied upon too heavily, and that's where you know, a guy like Nate Schmidt. I mean, he started off a little slow with this team, new team and all, and new coaches, and you know, getting used to the room and the lack of preseason games. We've talked all about that. A long road trip on the, you know, to start the season, and not enough time to bond with his new team too, because they're confined to the hotel room and all. But I think now that he's getting more comfortable, you know, you're going to see Travis Green. He's already doing it. He's relying on Nate Schmidt a lot more, and so it may even allow Tyler Myers some more room to and just to be more comfortable and to produce more on both ends of the ice, or just for the team, you know, be more effective for the team. But one last, is this anything? I wanted to read this one before we jump to break here. Speaking of players' numbers, could you see a time where a non-goalie wears the number one in the NHL? That's from Jason the Killer Goalie. Is that anything?
No.
Oh, get out of here, Pitch. Show me a one. Show me a zero. Let's see somebody rocking double O's.
I hate the zero.
I think the one would be really awkward to see skating on around the ice. I don't know. Like,
I think it's too cocky, honestly. Like, who wants to be number one? You want to be number one on the ice? Are you kidding me?
Right? Yeah. You know, I'm not going to say that won't ever happen, but as far as right now, I think somebody else is going to have to do something drastic first. Like, you know, the double zero, like was a Guy Lemain in the Mighty Ducks, or
so good.
Yeah. All right. Anyways, you're listening to the Larshcast here on Sportsnet 650, home of the Vancouver Canucks on Sportsnet Today.
It's time for Sportsnet Today. This is the Larshcast on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. You are with the Larshcast on Sportsnet. Ryan here with TJ, Nav, Sat, Joey, and producer Joel Gaudette. We've just got a half an hour left for you, and we've got a pretty exciting guest coming up shortly. We've got Murat Atesh, athletic beat reporter for the Winnipeg Jets, coming on in a couple minutes here to discuss the game yesterday and also tee up the game tomorrow for us and give his thoughts on where both of these teams are at. He, as always, with all of our guest is brought to you by HBD Homes Limited, a design build new home builder with over 20 years of experience specializing in new home construction, laneway homes, and renovation. You can visit their website at hbdhomes.ca, their Instagram page at hbd_homes, or call them directly at 778-968-1491. And we've got a poll question going here today, and we'll do a quick update. Sat, are you able to let the folks know how we're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, our poll question here is if Travis Hamonic, who's also a Winnipeg native, so it's kind of a connection there, if Travis Hamonic is healthy, who comes out of the Canucks lineup? We got, you know, three options and then a fourth option that's kind of taking the cake here. So first is Olli Juolevi would come out, or Jordy Benn, Tyler Myers, or no one. And the whole show, it's kind of been no one leading the way, and you know, it's ticked up a bit here. Almost 50% of the 900 votes are voting for no one, so nobody really wants
to
make
Game of Thrones right now. Change. Or what? No one.
Yeah, nobody really wants to make a change there. So, I think we have Murat on the line now. Murat, how are you?
Doing quite well. Hey, how are you guys doing?
We're doing great, thanks. And you know what? We would have been doing a bit better if the Canucks had come out on top instead of losing 2-0 to the Jets the other night. But we're happy to be talking to you about the Jets here. And you know, the Canucks and Jets have only played 2 games this season. So we're still trying to feel the team out, as you know, how they're going to be in this North Division. It was last night's game a true indication of how the Jets season has gone, and do they really play that, I guess, tight of a game typically, or are they more like a North Division game and a lot of goals?
I'd say they're typically much more representative of North Division Canadian hockey. I mean, it's been pretty wide open. Not necessarily because Winnipeg wants to draw it up that way, but there have been times when a really aggressive forecheck can keep the Jets hemmed in their own end for extended periods of time. We've seen that as recently as earlier this week. And at the same time, though, when you have players like Mark Scheifele, who can set himself up for that breakaway goal, or the depth that includes Kyle Connor, Nick Ehlers, Paul Stastny, there's a lot that can go right for Winnipeg in the offensive zone, and a lot that can go wrong at the other end of the ice, too. So I'm surprised it was so close and just ended with 1-0 plus an empty netter.
Yeah, it was an interesting game to watch as well, too. And the one thing I find myself focusing on when I'm watching the Winnipeg Jets play is I find myself drawn back to all of the turmoil that this organization had last season. You know, you had the Dustin Byfuglien situation looming over them at the start of the season, a rash of injuries, a bit of an up-and-down start for Connor Hellebuck. I'm just curious how you assess this team now as they stand with today's roster and where the chemistry is at with this team, if that's in the rearview mirror, and if maybe you have an assessment for maybe what the one big need that the Winnipeg Jets would need to address to be a real contender moving forward.
Well, I think you did it so well to put it in context. I mean, last year was such a down year for the Jets. They relied, once Connor Hellebuck got his wings under him, they relied on him so heavily, the defense, injuries, departures, you name it. And so the question heading into this season was, where are the Jets really in terms of their cycle? Are they still that contending team we saw a couple of years ago? How bad is the rebuild going to be? What are the growing pains going to be like? And I think that Kevin Cheveldayoff signaled very early by trading for Paul Stastny, I think it was October already, that this was still a win-now team for the Winnipeg Jets. This is still a team that sees itself in that Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele window of contention. They've got four more years on their contracts. And so from there, the only other piece of turmoil to solve was Patrick Laine. And, of course, he and Jack Roslovic have turned into Pierre-Luc Dubois, who has only played two games for Winnipeg so far. We might see him on Sunday. So we're to watch the Winnipeg Jets right now, it's still a work in progress. The team that you saw last night is missing a top six forward in Pierre-Luc Dubois. But once you can see him fitting into the team, you go, hey, this is an incredibly deep center group. Scheifele, Dubois, Stastny, and Lowry, that's a great group. It's just on defense, and you'll see Vancouver's forwards pick Winnipeg's defenders apart the more they play against each other.
Hey, Murad, it's Tej here. I just got to say, we're having a little chuckle. Not a chuckle, we're just talking on the side here that you're very well-spoken, and you know, that's a great, great attribute. But I'm thinking here, you sound like the Winnipeg Jets, you know, beat writer version of Harmon Dial. Have you guys had any chances to have a discussion? You know, your athletic coworker there. What's your relationship with Harmon?
Oh, man. You know what? I admire Harmon quite a bit. We haven't co-wrote any pieces or co-written any pieces so far. I think we both come with a bit of a similar attitude, similar love of analytics. We've talked on the phone a couple of times just how to approach different scenarios. Yeah, I think you got a great one in Harmon out there.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to touch on one thing. You mentioned Patrick Laine. What's been the sense in Winnipeg? Is it a lot of relief that the whole Patrick Laine saga is now over? You know, it's kind of seemed like an annual conversation almost on a day-to-day, maybe month-to-month basis. There was another conversation about Patrick Laine over the last couple of years. So what's the sense of, is it relief in Winnipeg? What's the sense there?
I feel for the fan base in Winnipeg because relief is what you'd want for them. Relief is exactly the emotion. You'd wish that they'd have, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois coming in healthy, putting up points, having some highlight reel goals to sort of pay attention to, because the more you can pay attention to that, the less attention you have to give to Laine's strong start in Columbus, or even Jack Roslovic, the throw-in supposedly on that trade, who I see as kind of a middle six forward. He's not going to be a point per game forever, but those guys are on fire down in Columbus while Winnipeg's watching the injured reserve for Pierre-Luc Dubois. So I don't think relief has hit yet. Laine was an incredibly popular player. Yes, some people were sick of the drama. Will he stay? Won't he stay? All that sort of stuff. But I think for Jets fans that I talk to, they really need to see the payoff of all of that heartache before they can really quite move on for it. So I'm hoping he gets healthy and Jets fans can have that to look forward to.
All right. And just shifting on to the defense here for a moment. I heard on the broadcast here the other day that Josh Morrissey doesn't have a goal at all this year, and which is kind of strange because last season he was having a great offensive season. So as the defensive, you know, tiers go, and you got Morrissey and Pionk, and is that kind of all that's really, I guess, a show for the Jets defense? Or like, how does the tiers actually work, and how can the Jets actually upgrade that, you know, internally, or what can they use to maybe upgrade from with a trade, or maybe
yeah,
in that sense?
That's a That's the key. I think that, you know, you guys had asked about what's the weakness. Defense is absolutely the weakness in Winnipeg. You sort of have two pairs that I would like if they were the second pair. So Derek Forbert and Neil Pionk have played really quite well. I'd say they've played the most at even strength. They've been the go-to for the tough matchups for most of the season because Josh Morrissey, one, hasn't started completely on fire like you'd hope for from a player of that pedigree. Two, they've rotated a whole bunch of different partners beside him. At first, I was hoping it was going to be Dylan DeMello, a player I like a lot to put his partner in good situations. But DeMello missed the first couple games of the season due to wanting to stay home with his wife who had just given birth. Tucker Pullman was in and out of the lineup. They played a game with Sammy Niku beside Josh Morrissey, Ville Heinola beside Josh Morrissey. So he's still getting his legs under him, now mostly with Tucker Pullman. But you don't have that Dustin Byfuglien presence in Winnipeg anymore, or even that pairing of Josh Morrissey and Jacob Trouba. Both of those guys used to be amazing as a top four. They could play a tough game. They could play a cycle game. They communicated incredibly well, and neither player has been the same without each other since back in the day when they were Winnipeg's, you know, on paper top pair, sometimes top four. So where's the improvement going to come from? I'm honestly not sure, because the next wave is Ville Heinola. He had an incredible year in Finland, incredible World Junior Tournament this year, on the All-Star team, and now he's playing with the Manitoba Moose. Same with Dylan Sandberg. Tremendous college career, looking to turn pro. He's playing his first pro games for the Jets organization with the Moose right now. So the pipeline is on the cusp, not quite there yet. And then today I see at The Athletic, Pierre LeBrun is talking about, hey, maybe the Jets are one of the teams that could be in on Matthias Ekholm if Nashville makes him available as part of their rebuild. Because I think that you guys are right to point at it. It's the soft underbelly of the Winnipeg Jets. Yes, the centers are incredibly deep. The forwards are great. The goaltending is great. But the defense struggles in its own zone, struggles to move the puck out, and can really be exposed by some of the elites around the league. So they need help.
The Jets, since relocating back to Winnipeg from Atlanta, they've put up a record of 16-8 against the Canucks since relocating back in 2011. Is there a mindset in the Winnipeg dressing room that a game against the Canucks almost isn't that big of a challenge due to the fact that they've dominated them so resolutely over the past 8 years?
You know, I wonder about that. I think it was Blake Wheeler who was asked about that not too long ago. It was right before the Vancouver win, I think, because the Jets had won so many games in a row. And I'm not sure that they were even aware of it. I mean, it's just one of those quirks. I mean, you see weird stats like, oh, teams on Saturday afternoons with a certain record, or Mondays, or after this or after that. And I think that that's just some of the chaos. Maybe this is a Harmon Dial kind of bit of thinking right here. But just analytically, mathematically, statistically, some of that stuff's going to happen. Like, to me, that's a shift's happen kind of explanation for things. I don't know that Winnipeg has been better than Vancouver by any stretch. I mean, Vancouver's had some really great teams. Winnipeg rebuilded for a while, and then the Jets have been pretty strong, and now I feel like they're very close matches. So I don't know what to make of that, and I can't believe that the streak continues. I think with some of that young talent that Vancouver has, I think it was Pettersson who said last night that, you know, he's sick of saying that they keep playing well and not necessarily having results. I mean, that's eventually going to turn. I have to believe it.
You know, yeah, it's
Go ahead, Ryan.
It's interesting that you said that. And once again, you're listening to the LarshCast on Sportsnet 650. We're with Marett Attesh, athletic beat reporter for the Winnipeg Jets, discussing the series between Winnipeg and Vancouver. Canucks obviously falling victim to Winnipeg last night in a continuing trend against this team, 2-0 for Winnipeg. But Marett, I just want to ask kind of your sense as somebody who obviously working for the Athletic, you're following the league quite closely. You have a good sense of where all the teams in this Canadian division are at, I would suspect. We have our own opinions of our team in market because we look at them every day. But I just want to get what your perception of this team is and where you think it falls within the hierarchy of this Canadian division, and whether or not you think that this core roster has enough juice to get it done here. Because I know we have our own opinions here in this marketplace, but we don't often hear from people out of market or that are connected to other teams like you.
A wide array of opinions, especially on Canucks Twitter, if you've seen.
Yeah, right? True.
Absolutely. Hey, so the outsider's opinion of the Vancouver Canucks at this stage, hey, for me, I think that the key thing that I take away, I was asked about what I thought about the game last night, kind of mid-game, and I thought to myself, this can't possibly be Vancouver's best. That was my opinion of that, because I think that when you have Elias Pettersson and Brock Besser and so many others, and Quinn Hughes, and I would have expected Vancouver to be able to give Winnipeg more trouble with an aggressive forecheck, more trouble hemming them inside their own zone. Even with Winnipeg's great forwards, there's just times where defensively the Jets have been able to be buried in their own zone by teams that I think on paper should be lesser than Vancouver. So it was my impression, my takeaway was that the Canucks can't be playing at 100% right now. The other thing that I took away from it was, I mean, if you go head-to-head with Scheifele and Pettersson last night, if you go, I think that was the matchup. Yeah, like 7 minutes they played against each other last night, and shot attempts were 10-2 in Vancouver's favor during that. So at the top end, it seems to me that the Canucks are set. I don't know if the offense is pouring in right now, but with that kind of elite talent, I feel like Vancouver has to be settled. It's that bottom six, and I'm beginning to think of the Canucks as almost an Edmonton-type team where you've got two lines that you really have to match up against. Oh, no way. Okay, so I'm just parroting
you guys. I brought that up, and TJ was not happy with me, but I agree. I think there's some sorry, I just was so excited to hear you say that. I think you're right. Sorry, continue on.
I think that was towards the end of my thought process. But when I'm thinking about how Winnipeg matches up against teams, and, you know, Scheifele is the power versus power answer. He's got a lot of offense. He's not a dominant defensive player, but he's working on it. He's a very good offensive player. And then usually you'll see Adam Lowry with Matthew Perreault and Mason Appleton this year as kind of the checking line, though the Jets don't always stick to that. So you can look, if you're familiar with the Jets, at how they rate other teams as top six, bottom six, based on how they deploy those lines. And I think that Vancouver's bottom six was exploitable by the Jets last night in terms of zone time, chances, all that sort of stuff.
Murat, I just want to ask you, I mean, just from an observational standpoint, it seems like Blake Wheeler has definitely lost a step. I want to hear your thoughts on his game and where it's at, and what you think, you know, how many more years as a top line forward that he has.
Oh, man, how much time do you have on this one? Because I have an essay on Blake Wheeler.
I hit a sweet spot, didn't I? Go off, though. Let's hear.
Well, I think that Blake Wheeler is a player whose reputation has never been in line with his talent. And I mean that on both sides, because from about 2014 or so, maybe a little bit before that, to 2018, he was one of the best five-on-five hockey players on the planet. And I don't think he got anywhere near the respect for that. I think the top four he was fourth, part of me, in even strength points over that stretch of time. It's basically a who's who of guys that are surefire Hall of Famers, Blake Wheeler, and then a bunch of the rest. He dominated play at 5-on-5. He could skate through people, around people. His puck possession game was incredible. And he was really part of what was really a one-line team for the Jets for a long time on that little Ladd and Wheeler line. And I don't think that people outside of Winnipeg realized that this was a special, unique, top-tier player in the National Hockey League. Then in 2017, 2018, Winnipeg has an incredible year. They go to the Western Conference Finals. Wheeler puts up, I think it's 91 points. The big difference that happened there was that his power play totals went off. The Jets figured out a 1-3-1 that they liked. They found seams from Wheeler to Laine. Wheeler to Laine created so many goals. All of a sudden, Blake Wheeler, still producing at even strength like he always has doubled his power play points and is being thought of as an all-star in consideration for end-of-season awards. And the perception is that all of a sudden at 30-something, he's become this brand-new player. He hadn't. It's just his usage had changed and the power play was really dialed in around him. So now what's happened, I think, is that the perception league-wide is that he's this 90-something point player. And to your point, over the last couple of seasons, he's actually taken a step back at 5-on-5 each year. You said top-line player. Now he's producing at 5-on-5 like a second-line player, like a good second-line player, but not one at that $8.25 million that is his contract. And so now I'm beginning to wonder if maybe to some, his reputation is bigger than his ability to dominate the game. So we have a microscope on him in Winnipeg. He had a slow start. I think he was playing a little bit hurt. You know, that's speculation on my part, but I feel pretty good about saying that. And he started to round out into form in the last week or so. He said it himself last night. He's feeling a lot better. And I think that step that he's lost, well, maybe real for sure. I think he's no longer one of the elites, but I think he's a better player than what we've seen so far this season. And you know, I think last night was a good step forward for him. And then you'll see it again on Sunday. I think this is still a top six player, even at this stage of his career. That's the essay, guys.
You know what, Murat? That's great. And I have Wheeler in one of my dynasty cap leagues, so this is quelling a lot of my fears. And I'm going to try to trade him immediately based on what you're saying. But you know what? Thanks for the time there, Murat. We're definitely going to speak again, maybe get into more Blake Wheeler later on this season. Thanks for the time.
Hey, thank you for yours. I appreciate being on.
Take care, Murat.
Thanks, Murat. Hey guys, right. before we move on here, Sad, I just want to jump in. I got speaking of The Athletic, because we just had Murat on from The Athletic, but I don't know if you guys have seen this update, but in terms of the coaching pool getting a little thinner and how the mighty have fallen, mm-hmm. Mike Babcock, former Red Wings coach, to join University of Saskatchewan.
Yeah, I mean, he's got to restart his career somewhere.
That's it.
I mean, That's a nice
do you really want Mike Babcock in charge of your youth?
Of kids. Seriously. That's it, man. Like, you know, screaming at a bunch of kids.
The kids are going to be the same age that Mitch Marner was when Babcock made him rate his teammates by work ethic.
Yeah.
So why would you... If you were in charge of the University of Saskatchewan, why would you ever let that happen to your kids?
Well,
he's
a legend.
He's a hockey legend, and he... You know, he'll teach them great, you know, things in terms of hockey related on the ice and off, but or more on the ice. But some of the off ice stuff, I mean, there's a little bit of a disconnect there. Yeah. Putting him in charge, I don't know. That's just what I think.
It's a bit strange. It's a bit strange. But you know what? You knew this was going to happen with Mike Babcock, because he has to restart somewhere, and it's not going to be the NHL or the AHL. So he's got to work his way back up. Maybe this is his retirement gig. Who knows?
Or like you just alluded to, maybe all the doors and opportunities have shut on him, and so he has no choice, right? So it could be.
And it's not like he needs the money, guys. So props to him. Like, say what you want. Maybe he's trying to reform himself too. Maybe he's learned the error of his ways. You know, I'm prone to want to give guys the benefit of the doubt.
All right. You know what? We want to give a big thanks to all of our guests today. Murat Atesh of The Athletic and Joey Kenward, as always. Also, Brad Thomas of Point Shot Hockey. Thanks for joining us on that. We have Into the Podverse again next week. Is This Anything? Also a new segment that we've debuted last week. Thanks again for listening to The Larshcast. My name is Sat, here for TJ, Nav, Ryan, and Joey. See you next week.
Coming up next, by the way, is On Air with Israel Fair and Alex Blair. Take care.